less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. You will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore.
Converted to the Bill Pullman cause. I had something better to play, and then I realized there was a colossal, colossal torrent of profanity about halfway through. I had a great speech all queued up. This is my fault for not preparing it last night at home. I sat, this is my exciting life. So I went home last night, and at a little home office, a little office inside my house. And so we're there, and it was just the poodle is sitting on the floor. My wife is sitting in an armchair reading some hippie book. And I'm sitting at the computer editing Glengarry Glen Ross speeches. And I spent about an hour doing that, and then I realized it was pointless because the Glengarry Glen Ross speeches are all so unbelievably profane that they just don't even exist. Once you've removed the profanity, there's nothing left. Literally, I mean, that Alec Baldwin speech, the always be closing speech, there's just nothing. I mean, if you bleep out all the profanity, you remove it or reverse it or whatever, you got like 35 seconds of film left. It's pointless. So then I had, then I was trying to do the Say Anything speech today. And then, yeah, really? Okay. Scotty. Yeah. Scotty was in the process of editing down the Glengarry Glen Ross speech as we speak. Yeah, no, it's pointless. There's just nothing. It's just one long, continuous beep. Anyway. So today I had something else prepared, but it was about halfway through. There was just a bunch of MF this and CS that and so forth. Yeah. I did have a better suggestion, by the way. I had something that was all queued up. I did have something that our friend Seamus sent to us. Seamus sent us this fantastic suggestion that I had queued up. I had it locked and loaded. We were ready to go. And then somebody on the program deemed it to be stupid.
I didn't say stupid.
What did you say? What did you call it?
I said it's not the way that we should probably start a Friday show.
I'm just saying.
It was just all sappy and like, who can out there and fight? I would much rather start with Independence Day, be inspired by Bill Pullman.
Uh-huh. All right. We'll talk more about it here in a second. 5 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11 in this, the month of June, in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious, studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you want to email us, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Other email addresses for the folks on the show: sarah@970.am, tim@970.am, and scottyj@970.am. Again, our phone number is 503-733-2970. And this is how badly I was prepared for the program. This is how little work I got. I didn't get any actual real work done before the show today because I was just so busy trying to edit down like some tombstone speech. Which I also did not get done. I got a whole bunch of speeches I almost got finished for today. But no. No, it's just more Bill Pullman. You can really never have... We ought to just start each show with a different Bill Pullman speech every day.
That is a good idea.
Go through his entire oeuvre. And just one by... We'll do it chronologically. Anyway, wasn't he in that movie Mr. Wrong with Ellen DeGeneres?
He was.
Yeah. Why do I even know that?
I watched that movie, too.
You know, here's the thing about Mr. Wrong with Ellen DeGeneres. It has exactly the same cover artwork as Muriel's Wedding. You look at the why do I know that? You look at the DVD package for Muriel's Wedding, and then you look at the DVD for Mr. Wrong with Ellen DeGeneres and Mr. Bill Pullman. And you talk about that just the weirdest coupling on film ever. I mean, seriously. Anyway. All right, here's what's coming up today. And I have to sort of conflate my two sections of notes, yesterday's notes and today, because I didn't even get done writing down all the stuff I wanted to do today because I was so busy desperately trying to not have Bill Pullman give a speech at the top of the show, a task at which I spectacularly failed today.
You know what's sad is that I didn't realize until this point that Bill Pullman's biggest movie role was Independence Day. Everything I'm trying to find on YouTube under Bill Pullman, every other one is a thing from Independence Day.
Totally. Fantastic.
Oh, it's sad.
You look at his filmography on IMDb, and it's a whole lot of, like, in production, in turnaround. Projected release date, 2014. So here's what's coming up today. Today is one of those shows where before we even start, we have no wiggle room. There's so much schedule. There's so much that we've got planned out for today. It's one of those programs where even now at 11:07, I can already feel the exhaustion that's going to set in at like 3:01 when we're done. Which doesn't mean it's going to be a bad show. It's going to be a fantastic show. Here's why. From Aqua Teen Hunger Force and Aqua Teen Hunger Force, the movie, nerdcore artist MC Chris will be joining us today. Attention all men between the ages of, I don't know, probably 18 and maybe 38 or so. MC Chris joining us on the program today. Scott Daly and Aaron Duran from FilmFeverRadio.com and GeekIntheCity.com. We've got reviews of the Transformers film today. We got reviews of Sicko. We have a review of Die Hard 4, which I ended up not seeing. It was supposed to see it on Tuesday, but then it turned out that it was in Tigard. And it's like, do I really want to drive to Tigard to see a movie that's going to suck anyway? The answer to that is no. Regardless of whatever that Nimrod who called up yesterday, it's as good as the first, which it's not. In no way.
Except for the villain.
No, he was a mouth breather. I don't mean a mouth breather in that he was dumb. I'm not saying that. I mean, literally, he was a guy doing a lot of breathing through his mouth while he was on the phone with us. It was a whole lot of... So anyway, about Die Hard. Anyway. What else do we have? If I'd had more time here, I would have... hey, wait, hold on. Who wants to feel old? Who wants to feel old? I love feeling old. Darren, you want to feel old?
Oh, sure.
Hey, guess who turned 17 years old today? Harry Potter. No. The kid on the front of the Nevermind album. That baby on the front of the Nevermind album, because it's not a drawing or a painting, it's a real kid. And how'd you like your wiener to be seen by everybody? You talk about, like, you go over to visit somebody and your parents. Did you ever do this? You have, like, a girlfriend, boyfriend come over, and your parents are dragging out photos of you in the bathtub when you're 6 months old and hairless. Just to, you know, look at this. Look, he's so cute. It's funny. And it's just you and your business hanging out in the bathtub. How'd you like to be that kid? I would say that's probably the most widely seen penis that's not attached to the Statue of David. I'm just speculating. I would say that's probably the most widely seen penis in all the world that doesn't belong to Ron Jeremy. But that kid who's on the front of the Nevermind album turned 17 years old today. So there you go. In your face, everybody who's younger than me, now you can feel old. All right, it's 503-733-2970. So that's what's coming up today. We have CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard joining us about how Bush got told to stuff it with this immigration bill. And apparently they're still doing, I guess up until this week, I guess they were still busing children into school districts. I didn't know that school busing was a thing that still happened. I thought that was just a thing that happened in old episodes of All in the Family. But I guess that they were, I don't know, they were just packing kids up into schools and sending them off to... You know, they're doing some weird, like, forced integration thing or whatever. I mean,
that just happened in Boston.
But I thought that it was a thing that had just gone away somehow, or maybe just a protest about it went away. But apparently not, because I guess there's some big vitriolic argument within the Supreme Court about it. So you can talk about that a little bit. Rachel McGrath will be joining us from Los Angeles to talk about the release of the iPhone, which happened today. So there you go. Oh, Court and Fatboy are going to be on later on as well to clarify the Transformers bet. And so for the number of people who stopped by my office today to talk to me about the Transformers movie, which I guess there was a premiere of it last night, I guess a sneak preview of the Transformers film. And so I have many, many people come by my office who saw it and wanted to talk to me about it. That, and we've got a spoiler-free review of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Oh, my gosh. Just please tell me if it was good or not.
I haven't seen it.
I know, but did they say? Did they allude?
I got no... I got no further information. I got a text message last night. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say from who. But I got a text message last night from somebody who said... somebody who says, tomorrow I will be giving you a spoiler-free review of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
It's the most magical thing since the iPhone.
It really is. Yeah, that's right. An Entourage again this weekend. Man, that's so great that they're doing those Entourage seasons back to back. Because they ended season 3 and then they went right into season 4 after 1 week off. It's a huge ad for it in today's New York Times. That's fantastic. What a great show. You know what I forgot about Kevin Dillon, who plays Johnny Drama? I forgot that he was in Oliver Stone's The Doors. He played the drummer. He played John Densmore. I completely forgot that.
Man, I spent 6 months of my life watching that movie when I was in London. That was the only tape that we had on VHS in our dorm. We'd watch that every single day.
Fantastic.
I was in London about the time that thing was hot.
Really?
Yeah, the Doors movie. Everyone was crazy about it.
I went back and I watched The Doors this weekend. That movie I watched, it was on IFC. Not IFC. It was on Bravo or some crap. It was on some channel. Anyway, and I sat and I watched that Oliver Stone The Doors movie all the way through.
It's a good one. Oh, God.
Well, I'm just saying, it seemed good at the time. We shouldn't get into a whole thing.
Bon Jovi, the number one Elvin American, number one in Europe, number one in Canada, number one in Japan.
Bon Jovi, really?
Bon Jovi.
Yeah. There's too much going on today.
That's a newspaper from the past.
Seriously. it's fallen through a wormhole.
Available now at Target. It's the Lost Highway album.
Era. All right. Hi, Sean, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Oh, hey, I was just calling about the Independence Day speech play every day.
Fantastic, yeah.
For some reason, I can't stop thinking of, as soon as he says, "Today, we celebrate our Independence Day," that the Dean scream should play over it. For some reason, it just reminds me of the Howard Dean scream.
We celebrate our Independence! Yeah!
Exactly. Yeah. And I think if you did that, you might enjoy it more, too. Or if you integrated the Dean speech with that.
Or if I just had somebody distract me by kicking me in the testicles over and over again, what was happening. All right. Well, we'll give it a shot, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day.
There you go. Any one of these things that we've started talking about, Entourage, this Bon Jovi album, we could do a full hour on any of these topics. If this program is dangerously overstuffed, even right here at the beginning. Do we have... Fantastic.
That's pretty funny.
God damn, this is the best show ever. All right, it's 503-733-2970. I just mean today. I mean in general, in toto, as the legal people say. All right, we're joined today, as we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon, stirring up a bowl of Easy Mac from Plaid Pantry, right as you speak.
I know, and I left it in the microwave too long, and now it's all sticky.
I can't eat that. What's in the kitchen? What's in the kitchen right now is sort of a cup of soup that's still sealed, but it's not a cup of soup. It's like a cup of macaroni. But it's like spiral cheese macaroni.
Soupy
cup of
macaroni?
Soup. Macaroni? Totally. It's like a weird Maruchan ramen sort of cup of thing, but it's macaroni. It's sort of like that, but bigger. I've never had that Easy Mac. Now, is that just regular Kraft macaroni that you just add water to?
Yeah, it's okay.
All right.
It's edible. Did I tell you I started a new job yesterday?
Yes. Is this the job where you work for clothing?
I have a problem.
This is not as pathetic as it sounds, by the way. I don't mean to make it sound like she's a Guatemalan school child. I mean, you work for, we won't say where, unless you want to, but we probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
But you are now working at another, let's say a...
A retail?
No, we'll say a very specialized clothing boutique.
Yeah. That makes it sound more glamorous.
Well, no, that's what it is. It's not... You know, you're not working, not selling fat pants at Walmart. It is a place that specializes in a certain type of clothing. And you are now working there, and they have agreed to pay you in, like, handbags.
Well, I can either get an hourly wage or close.
You know?
And it sucks because I went there and I'm like, oh, I made some money tonight, and then I left with a brand new sweatshirt.
No. Yeah. Instead, you leave with something that has, like, you know, like a demonic Hello Kitty on one side. Because I've seen, because we know somebody else who works there, and she also works for handbags and shoes. And let me just, I made the most brilliant observation, and I don't think it was on the air. I think it was when I was talking to this other friend of ours who works at this clothing boutique, and she gets paid in purses. And I made really the most profound comment, which is that is the female equivalent to being a porn star. Because that's the guy thing, right? That's why they only, you know, guys in porn films don't make anything. A woman in a porn film, they, you know, makes like $3,000-$4,000, you know, I think a movie. But a guy makes like $200. You know, he's paid in getting to pork some blonde girl. So by working in a clothing boutique, we're not going to pay you, but we will give you this brand new purse.
I know. I walked into the room yesterday, and I didn't realize that everything that they sell is actually in the room. There's a closet, an enormous closet full of every shoe that you could ever imagine. Shoes, like handbags, clothes, like dresses, jackets, shirts, jewelry, everywhere, just surrounding in this, like, room.
You feel like you're going to pass out?
Seriously, after I was done, after I finished working last night, I'm like, all right, I can either take the money or, like, go and find something cute to wear tonight.
That's totally like a, well, we'll give you $35 cash or $75 credit.
Yeah.
So I'll take the credit. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today. And just before you even say anything, I wrote down these two fantastic quotes from Tim today. We were in the kitchen before the show, and our friend Gia, who works at in promotions for our sister station, Movin' 107.5, she, I believe, was making herself a cup of tea, and she had just taken a cup out of the dishwasher. The dishwasher was clean. It was, you know, the little sign said clean. She'd taken the cup out of the dishwasher, put a tea bag in, filled it with water, put it in the microwave, and hit like 2 minutes or whatever. And she hadn't really inspected the cup before she put the water inside. So the microwave dings, she opens the microwave, she takes the cup out, and only then does she realize that the dishwasher had done an insufficient job of cleaning the mug, which was filled with, wait for it, dried out, baked on mold. Just mold lining the inside of it like furry stalagmites. Just covering the inside. And I thought she was going to be ill. And Tim made the following observation. Actually, two quotes. Tim said, as he sort of walked out of the kitchen shuddering, he said, "This entire place is disgusting." And then he was noting how our studio is actually pretty clean because we take care of it. And he said, "Our studio is pretty clean, except for the weekend people who have no respect for decency."
Which really is true.
All right. Hello, Tim. Howdy. How are you doing?
I ate a lot of stuff today.
All right, fantastic.
Delivery to all of it. But here are some story suggestions. The Blazers are having this huge party at Pioneer Courthouse Square at noontime because they hired somebody named Greg Oden who throws a ball through a hoop.
You know, they did that just so they could use that headline in the Oregonian today about how it was the Garden of Oden.
Oh, that sounds good. A young punk burglar gets shot by a 71-year-old homeowner in Northeast this morning. A high-speed chase in St. Paul comes to a close when the motorist rolls his car several times going 120 miles an hour. Remember that Japanese prime minister that old President Bush threw up on?
I do, indeed.
He's dead. Veggie booty is recalled.
Yeah, the pirate's booty. The
I
veggie
eat that
booty.
All the time.
Don't eat it.
You're gonna die.
It's filled with salmonella.
Oh,
salmonella?
My God.
Yeah.
I just bought...
We should not
it
tell
it
people.
Might as well come from the station kitchen.
Let's not tell anybody what it is quite yet.
I just bought pirate's booty yesterday. I almost bought veggie booty and I didn't.
It's filled with something. Let's not reveal what it is yet, though. Let's make people wait.
We'll tell them it comes from China. You know what that means. They dump antifreeze at everything.
We've got all this... We've got all of these bags of ground glass we don't know how to get rid of. Let's just put it in with the pirate booty. Except I think it's not pirate booty. I think it is just veggie booty, but we're unclear about it. We'll find out. So don't eat that. It'll kill you.
And we'll talk more about the magic box, the iPhone.
All right. Fantastic. I can't wait. Did you see the mayor of Philadelphia slept in line to get an iPhone?
I did not.
Really, this entire country has just gone crazy.
Well, we're waiting for Harry Potter, and this is the most magnificent thing happening, too.
It really is true. This country just can't get enough of waiting in line for big events. That is true. And so the iPhone is just sort of there, and the iPhone is there between, like, Revenge of the Sith
and Harry
Potter.
It is a world series of phones.
It's true. It's, you know, well, you know what, the next one, and you can go to my website and you can see this. I haven't updated my site in like a week, and I apologize for that. But you go to my site, and there's that picture of Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. It is the first official photo from the set of Indiana Jones 4. And I know that I've talked a whole bunch of smack about that movie.
Yes.
And I've made fun of George Lucas, and I said that I didn't think it was ever going to happen, and I didn't think they were going to be able to pull it off. But I got to tell you, you go to my site, you look at that picture of Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't make your pulse race a little faster, you're a Soviet of some kind.
Did Aaron send you the email that he has with all the information of the behind-the-scenes stuff?
No.
Oh, it sounds like it's going to be really cool.
I almost don't want to know. I almost want to go into a blind just because, you know. I mean, he's an American icon. Indiana Jones, he's right up there with the guy that Sarah was calling Rocka Balabulia. What were you calling him today?
I kept thinking Rocky Balboato. He's a singer. And then I couldn't remember Rocky's last name.
See, and then I think you said Rocky Barberina.
Balboa.
So, well, we might as well talk about this now. This is, so, our good friend Seamus, who is the guy who lives in Colorado, and I think he could safely be described as one of our most loyal fans. He's the very definition of a P1.
Dad.
So he sends me this great speech today. Let me just see if I can find this here. This is because, as you know, we are trying.
We should have the people vote, because I believe I'm right.
I don't understand. I mean, like, between this and the Independence Day?
Or between that and anything. It just seemed like kind of a downer to start such a fun-packed show with.
Here's the thing, is that so many, and I made this observation yesterday, but it's not just sports films. So many of the great movie speeches of our time, and please, I don't want people to think that people have been sending me suggestions the last few days about this. I don't want people to think that I'm disregarding suggestions. It takes a long time to get some of the stuff put together. It's not like I own Casablanca on DVD. So many of the great movie speeches are also kind of melancholy. Like, here's another, here's one I almost played today. And I can do big chunks of this movie from memory, but I almost played Quint's Indianapolis speech from Jaws, where he talks about, what we didn't know was that our mission was so secret. No distress call had been sent. You know, and he talks about how it's, you know, and what does he say? 1,200 men went to the water, 538 men came out, the sharks took the rest, June 26, 1945. You know, and it's a fantastic speech, which, what's his name, Robert Shaw, himself wrote. He actually wrote that speech himself. But it's just creepy and sad, and there's that line in that Jaws speech about, I saw my friend Tommy Cooper, bosun's mate. Well, he'd been bitten in half below the waist. I mean, it's like, you can't start a show with that. You can't feed your family with a cod piece, and you can't start your show with a Jaws speech. So this is what Seamus wanted to send me. He said, Rick, I hope nobody sent this to you yet. I know it's a sports speech, but you know you love it, and it'd be great to open the show with. The whole thing is 2 minutes long, but just start it from the 45-second mark. Okay. I'm just going to play this now. This is the speech. And can I make an observation, by the way? I will say this, and I don't wish to...
I know.
I don't wish to begin an unpleasant conversation. I'm simply going to say, I do believe that Sarah Dillon views... I do believe you view Rocky through the tainted prism of a former relationship that ended badly. I do believe
that... That's probably... Rocky was shoved down my throat a little. I liked the first one.
You gotta watch it!
Yeah, seriously, I've had more men scream at me about Rocky than any other movie.
I've been that man. I got so defensive this morning because I was playing.
You actually said that you would punch me.
I was playing the Rocky speech and stuff. We can't play that. It's, you know, it's depressing or whatever. Rocky Schmocky. We're not going to play. And I actually raised my hand and I pointed my finger and I said, "Don't make fun of Rocky." And it was like this angry tone in my voice. And I have been that man, by the way.
You are that man.
I'm just saying, but like with, like, I have been that guy, like with women that I'm dating or women that, like with Lara. Lara's never seen it. And I'm like, "You've got to see it." Like, I did that with Joni. I would browbeat Joni about it until she saw it. You know, I have no vested interest in whether Joni sees Rocky or not, and yet there I was, like, just lambasting her belligerently every time I saw her until she agreed to watch it. I don't even know why I do those things. I don't know why men insist that all women see Rocky. I don't mean to generalize here, but really, broadly speaking, women are just not going to click with Rocky the same way that men do. I mean, for good or bad. And I know that there are women, you know, who do. I'm just saying, generally speaking, Rocky is a film that appeals to the male psyche in many ways. I'm not saying women can't like it or appreciate it, but it's a guy film. He speaks to guys. So I don't know. I mean, and I know this logically. Like, the left half of my brain knows this, but the right half of my brain just insist that every woman I'm dating, you've got to see this. You know, my entire life has been, my entire life is basically a series of women that I have forced Rocky upon. That's it. George Carlin said, your life is a series of dogs. No, no, no. My life is a series of relationships in which I force Rocky on a woman who doesn't want to watch it. So, I'm going to play you this speech. Now, this is not from the original. This is from Rocky Balboa, which came out last Christmas, which I saw and just wept like a small child at. And I understand that you were forced to watch it. So, try to listen to this. Try to listen to this speech.
I never had to watch this one, though.
See, that's the attitude I'm talking about right there. Because you broke up in time that you didn't have to go see this. You weren't forced to see Rocky Balboa. That's the attitude I'm speaking of, Sarah. Don't take it out on Rocky.
You're getting mad at me.
Rocky because of your unpleasant breakup.
But I'm not. What I'm saying, I was thinking of what's best for the show, and I just really, honestly, in my heart of hearts, don't think that this speech is the way to start a Friday show.
Well, here we go. So this is the speech that Seamus suggested we start today's show with. This is from Rocky Balboa. This is Rocky talking to his son, you know, Chester or Hank or whatever his name is. Guy who doesn't matter. Guy who I'll always think of as Jess from the Gilmore Girls. Milo Ventimiglia. This is Rocky speaking to his son, and his son who feels that he can't accomplish anything in life because he lives in the shadow of his famous father.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Now, come on. Come on. Who can possibly... You're unfairly tipping the scales by using the Howard Dean speech.
I'll put the Howard Dean speech in your Rocky speech.
Oh, wait. Let's try that. Hold on. Okay. So this is the...
When he says
you're better than that.
And not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Things go better with Howard.
A roided out Sylvester Stallone screaming at you on a Friday morning.
See, now you're just instigating. Now you're just asking to be pummeled.
I don't want to hear him say, you're better than that. Stop glaring at me.
See, I know that you're just trying to provoke me intentionally now. That's totally what this is. This is like when couples have that fight. You know what you're saying? It's like 2 in the morning. One of you or both of you is drunk. You're in the living room. Somebody is threatening to throw a lamp. You're screaming at each other, and you're intentionally trying to provoke. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, maybe if you hadn't had 9 abortions, you know, that's...
I'd like to hear from the people and see if anyone agrees with me. You're just too sensitive about it.
I'm not... I'm just saying... it's a fine speech. It's 503-733-2970. We'll let the delay catch up. We'll get a few calls here. Rick, I went to the train wreck Kyle Gass show last night. I'm certain you would have liked the show. The funniest part was seeing Kyle Gass in the crowd during one of the warm-up acts. He walked into the crowd with a pen looking to sign things. He was immediately flocked to by fat women. He signed their bosoms as he played Fat Rockstar. Good times. All right. What else do we have here? We have somebody about the Simpsons movie. Apparently there is a 7-Eleven here that is being made over into a Quickie Mart. So we'll get that. Oh, this is somebody suggesting an Al Pacino speech from City Hall. And Kevin Dillon is Johnny Drama. Kevin Dillon was in Platoon as well. I completely forgot about that. All right. Let's just get Scotty. I'll just go ahead and take some of these on screen here. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, I'll vote for Rocky.
Yeah, in your face, Sarah Dillon.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about. Thank you, sir. Thank you for being a real man. Thank you.
Being a real man.
That's what I'm saying. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Why, hello there. Hi, how are you, sir?
Hey, great. Rick, expecting these women to get Rocky is like expecting you to get Anna the Green Gables. It ain't going to happen, man.
Well, I do.
Oh, I love Mr. Man and Green Gables.
There you go.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
And it's so telling that he doesn't get it because he called it Anne of the Green Gables. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Rick, you are better than that. What are you doing listening to Sarah anyway? Come on, man. Speech.
Yeah.
That's it.
Friday. Yeah.
I can push the buttons and you will listen to Independence Day every day.
It's true. Really, we are just monkeys here to dance for her, sir. Don't anger the Sarah. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, I just wanted to say that speech is a moving speech. I'm not even a Rocky fan. I liked the first movie. I wouldn't have even seen the last one after the Russian pummeled him, you know. I stopped watching. But that speech where he said, you know, that everyone can't be blaming everyone else for their failure. Hey, I was just talking to my mother about that. It applies to my brother. He could even use the speech. So I got to say, good choice.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Okay,
God bless you.
I don't want to talk to any more angry men.
You know what? I'm not screening these.
I know,
I am
what?
Not. I'm taking these unscreened.
Okay. All right. I get it. You guys are all weirdly fascinated with Rocky.
Angry men. Somebody's defensive. Somebody's
no, because you're putting all these people in the air to scream at me. Rick, you're right. She's wrong. I get it. Yes.
Let's take another call. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, I like the Bill Pullman one.
Thank you.
What's wrong with you?
Everything's wrong with me. I run around in Mandalorian armor. Please.
Thank you. Bye now. All right. And we'll get this final call, which is not about Rocky.
Yeah, I like the Bill Pullman speech from Spaceballs.
Spaceballs. Somebody pointed out he was also in Ruthless People. He was the guy, the blonde hair with the black roots.
But at the end of the Rocky speech, you should really have the scream, not Howard Dean, but the one from The Who's Don't Get Fooled Again.
Probably not. What info do you have about this?
I was up at the 7-Eleven store at the corner of 92nd Southeast Stark last night, and they have the Squishy Machine logo over the top of the Slurpee Machine.
That is so cool. Does it look like they're going to be making other changes to the 7-Eleven? Are they going to actually make it into a Quickie Mart, or is it just a small change like that?
You know, I'm really keeping my fingers crossed that they'll go all the way, but they also got the Buzz Cola logo over the top of the fountain soda.
That is so cool. Well, let's hope that's the opening salvo.
And they've got little plastiform, clean plastic Simpsons characters all over the windows. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Very cool.
News.
And that's on 82nd or 92nd and where?
That's 92nd and Stark. And by the way, what do I have to do to get in the book, Rick? Because I want in the book.
No. People only get in the book in it unintentionally. You can't plan to be in the book, sir.
Well, you know, it was unintentional a while back, but I've committed horrendous sins against you, haven't I?
No, the book is for the rarefied among us, sir.
You don't hate me that much?
No, not yet, but there's always tomorrow. Thank you. Bye now. All right. I will read this email, Sarah, because I'm a fair man, before we go to break. Rick. Sorry to say, but Sarah's right about that sound clip. This is from a man, by the way. If you cold start a show with that Rocky speech, you're going to have to spend the next 4 hours getting the audience to take the guns out of their mouths. Also, please to be reminding me about that psych museum in Missouri so that I can visit it when I go out of town next week. I think it's the Glore Museum, sir. Or the Psychiatric Museum in Glore. Go to Cross Country Nate's MySpace page.
Did they go there?
I don't think they did. I think they were afraid it would scare the kid. I think that was the deal. All right. We got break here. We'll come back. Lisa Goddard around the corner about all kinds of incredibly fun and divisive issues. Later on, Rachel McGrath about the iPhone, Tim Riley in the new News Hour, Court, Fat Boy, Scott Daly, Aaron Duran, and MC Chris. All on the way. Stay right there. Why, hello. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. 503-733-2970. You know, I'm assuming this is Lisa Goddard on the phone, even though it hasn't been screened. Sure, Scotty will get right on that any second now. Oh, thanks, Scotty. Is it Lisa Goddard? Great, thanks. It's 503-733-2970, ladies and gentlemen. From the Hill, CNN Radio correspondent stars, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there, and how are you today?
Hello, and good Friday.
Yes, indeed it is. Wait, it's not really Good Friday, is it?
No, it's not. No, it is not.
All right, I don't keep track of those things anymore. All right, so I'm looking at the CNN prep sheet here, and there's some of the greatest phrases. Let's see what we've got here. We've got bitterly divided.
Right.
We've got, a crushing blow.
And we've got, let's see here, we've got...
Down in Flames?
Is that correct? No, we don't have Down in Flames, but it does say Subpoena again.
Okay,
so
hey,
it's a fantastic day. So I'm just going to go through these and just give me your thoughts as we roll through these. So we talked about this yesterday, but there's a little bit of recapping here. The U.S. Senate effectively, it says, killed a sweeping immigration overhaul bill Thursday, dealing a crushing blow to President Bush and to a bipartisan group that had fought to pass legislation. This has got to be a weird day to be a liberal, because on the one hand, it seems, you know, the left, generally speaking, is very much for things like immigration reform and making it easier for people who are in this country, who are not documented, as Harry Reid would say, to stay here. But on the other hand, it seems like liberals probably like for anything bad to happen to George Bush. So it's got to be a strange day for them, right, for people who oppose the Bush agenda typically but wanted some overhaul to the immigration system.
Right, that's right. You know, it's really fascinating to watch the little dance yesterday after the bill failed. The Democratic leader, Harry Reid, came out and said probably two or three times, we shouldn't blame anyone. Now is not the time to point fingers. I want to thank the president for all his work, trying to take this moral high ground when you know underneath, anyone who really wanted this bill to pass was a little bit pissed off that the Republicans were the ones who didn't vote for it. And it seems like the president really couldn't get his own party on board. Now, there were Democrats who voted against this bill, too, but it was mostly Republicans who voted against it. So, meanwhile, just a few minutes later, the president takes to the stage, and instead of doing this, oh, you know, we tried our best, and I'm not going to blame anyone, he came right out and said, Congress needs to figure out how in the world to branch these divides, how to come together on tough legislation, really basically saying Congress dropped the ball. So I think both sides are ready for the fallout, and they're handling it in different ways.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Was this George Bush's, speaking about him personally and his, quote, legacy, was this his last chance to do something big and sweeping domestically to sort of cement his reputation?
It feels like it, unless there's some kind of future domestic crisis that leads to a need for new policy, which, you know, could happen. But then you look at how long it took them to deal with Katrina. So if we have another Katrina, another disaster like that that begs for a policy change, it's hard to say that there's even enough time for the president to deal with it. So maybe, but if nothing unexpected happens, yeah, this was it.
All right, so let's move on to the next. So we've got this the fact that, did George Bush come out and say because of executive privilege, they're not going to comply with these subpoenas they got issued? Did he come out and actually use that phrase, the executive privilege phrase?
It was certainly in the White House statement that was released in response to this. I don't think the president said that in front of a microphone, though.
But that is generally what they're saying.
That's the official response, but, yes, executive privilege.
And I know that we sort of touched on this yesterday, but I'm never really clear about this. When the White House says executive privilege, bam, I mean, is that... That's not the be-all, end-all, right? I mean, is there a way around that, or is that an impenetrable executive cloak?
Right. Is that some sort of cloaking device that one can get past?
It's sort of a Romulan cloaking device, but from the White House.
Romulan cloaking device, exactly. The advanced form. You know, we don't know. That's the issue here. This looks like it's destined to go to the courts. The judiciary committees from both the House and the Senate have essentially given the White House a deadline in the next week and a half, I believe, I've got to look that up, to change its mind and to come forth with some document where they say they're going to take more action. And that basically implies that they're ready to have a court battle. But the president could win out in that court battle because of how long it would take. He may well be out of office before it could come to any conclusion.
Well, that's handy. And then finally today, this is sort of a trifecta of bitterly dividing things. I had no idea, because I don't have kids, don't plan to have kids, blah, blah, blah. I didn't even know that they were... Are they still busing school children in this country? I had no idea that... I thought that was a thing that only happened in, like, you know, Archie Bunker's hometown these days. I didn't even know that was still going on, where they'll take kids of one race and stick them across town in some school, you know, because there's some, you know, some sort of... I mean, I don't want to... Whatever the term for that is, they don't call it busing anymore. But, I mean, I didn't even know that was still going on.
Right. The issue in the Supreme Court decision yesterday wasn't so much busing, because in the past there was a case with a Charlotte school district in which the Supreme Court said in many cases widespread busing of students shouldn't be happening anymore, and it sort of was a district-by-district decision. But there are still districts in which students go to schools which are much farther from their the closest school to them for race reasons, and that the school district prefers that because they want to have diverse school districts. And there's some school districts, in particular Seattle, that say we want our school to have at least 15% of a minority population in every school, and in no more than X percent of a majority population. And that's really what was being tested yesterday. And some schools do achieve that by busing, but it's not the wide-scale busing usually that we saw right after desegregation in the South.
But this is like the Supreme Court just came out and said, like, you can't do it at all anymore now, right? Is that their ruling? That
not exactly. The ruling yesterday was a little complicated. They essentially did say that race should not be the main determinant in where a student goes. But in the same breath, the Supreme Court said race can be a consideration under some circumstances, and that race can be part of how you seek diversity in your school, but that by and large you should not use race as your main determinant, but that it can factor in. Essentially, it's a bit of a complicated ruling when you think of it that way, but the bottom line, and Justice Kennedy, who wrote the decision, gave a lot of specifics, far more specifics than you're used to seeing in a Supreme Court decision like this, because he knows hundreds of school districts around the country are going to be looking at this decision to base how they put their students in and where their students go to school. So what he said in that decision was that essentially it may be okay to, or this is how schools are interpreting it, to use things like economics.
Well, that was going to be exactly, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I was going to say that's exactly the observation I was going to make, because it does seem like in this country, there's, I got to be very careful about this. It does seem like, I'll use my dad as an example. I will use, which is always tricky because my dad is a terrible person. But my dad would just go on. He would get about halfway through like a half rack of Heineken, and he would begin to go on and on about school busing. And it was pretty obvious. It was not too hard to discern that was because my dad was just an incurable bigot. And so my suggestion has been for the longest time that, well, okay, if people want to insist that it's not because they are racist, then we'll just start doing things according to income. Because we all know in this country that there is a sort of unpleasant parallel between one's race and one's income.
Right.
And so if they started saying, well, fine, we're not going to bus kids according to race, we'll just bus them according to how much, you know, to whether they come from a poor family or not, that sort of effectively takes... that sort of effectively, it puts it on people who are opposed to this to kind of put up or shut up, and to admit whether they secretly just don't want their kids going to school with people who don't look like them.
Right, and I think that's what's going to happen in a lot of these school districts. What's interesting, though, is the decision said you can't look at a single student and say that student is black, or we need X number of black students at this school or white students at that school. But what you can do is you can consider race when you're, say, building a new school. So you could put a new school at the center of perhaps overlapping neighborhoods, say between a white neighborhood and a black neighborhood, so that it's more likely to be racially diverse. And you can use race in some broad decisions, but the court essentially is saying you should not use race when it comes down to individual students, and you know, X and Y percentages of race in individual schools is not the way to go. They're saying that is not constitutional.
All right. Well,
so it's a tricky.
The whole thing is complicated and depressing. And just as a real, as just a side note here, does Antonin Scalia, is he just? He just seems to be about half crazy most of the time. Because I was reading some of his, and I know this makes me sound like I have a fantastically exciting life. I was reading some of the court decisions and the statements by Antonin Scalia, and he really, it seems like it's everything he can do to just not, just go across the hall and just pummel some of the other justices physically. I mean, it just seems, reading Antonin Scalia's Supreme Court statements is sort of like watching the O'Reilly Factor, in that you just expect him to go across the desk and punch out the teeth of whoever it is he's disagreeing with. I mean, is that guy known to just be, I mean, is he just seems like a brutal, unlikable person.
Yeah, I have no idea. You know, I've seen him speak. I don't have a lot of personal experience with him. He definitely does give off that "don't mess with me" vibe in a very white guy kind of way. But yeah, I don't know how he gets along with the other justices. They are the height of professionalism. Those guys just never seem to get into personal drama on the Supreme Court. But you know, as much as I know that you are trying to create as much drama as you can. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe there's some fist fights. Him and Ruth Bader Ginsburg going at it.
Am I so transparent, Lisa? all right, final question before we head into the weekend. Where stand you on Rocky, the film?
We've talked about this. I mean, all the way thumbs up, yeah.
I apologize for not remembering that. I didn't know if we'd actually discussed Rocky specifically as a film. All right, we're sort of doing a broad canvas. Also, your favorite Billy Joel song. Go.
Oh, geez, that's tough. I don't know. The Italian restaurant one.
Hey, scenes from an Italian restaurant.
Italian restaurant, yeah.
Excellent. See, that's fantastic. Your tote board continues to go up with the Rick Emerson audience. All right, enjoy your weekend. Big plans?
Because I'm working tomorrow, working for the man tomorrow, and then Sunday, we're in the middle of wedding madness, so we've got to do these invitations. Now all of a sudden, our parents, who really didn't seem to want to be involved, now everybody cares about who's invited to what and when people are doing what and what they're wearing, and we're trying to keep it casual. Like, wear what you want. We don't care. Invite who you want.
Fantastic. Well, enjoy your week and try to rest up, and we will undoubtedly speak with you in the very near future.
Okay, very good.
All right, Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. Scenes from an Italian restaurant. Well done. Catherine, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick. Listen,
yes.
I just want to tell you, I've never seen any of the Rocky movies, but I think I've been converted, and I do vote for that.
Oh, because of the speech we played.
Okay, can I clarify? I'm not saying it's a bad speech. I'm saying I didn't think it was a good speech as a momentum building for the beginning of a Friday show.
I think
it's getting getting misconstrued.
No,
I think it is because the people are down, Sarah.
The people are down.
All right. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
All right. No, I agree. Having listened to it...
You told me during the break that you agreed with me.
I do believe that it is a little melancholy to start the show with. I mean... And again, not to rehash this point for like the 100th time, but that is, like, somebody sent me the speech from Miracle, which is that, the Kurt Russell film last year about the Miracle on Ice. It was the 1980 hockey. It was when the Americans beat the Soviets at hockey, which was thought to be undoable. It was thought to be impossible. And huge, it was one of the greatest moments in the history of American sports. I mean, even I know that. And but there was a movie made last year, a Disney film, with Kurt Russell. And somebody sent me, of course... the, like, halftime locker room speech, which is what all those... And it was a whole, you know, and it was... And he does all... I wish I had it, I'd play it. He hits every one of the hot buttons. He does the whole, don't think about next week or the future. Tonight is our night. Just this game. Just this once. Blah, 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 blah. And it's the whole thing. And it's, you know, it's a great speech, and it's inspiring, and it's whatnot, but goddamn, it's just depressing. I don't know how sports speeches always manage to be inspiring and depressing... All at once. Sports movie speeches are more depressing than war movie speeches. All right. Speaking of which, yes, we will play the Patton speech at some point. I got like 1,000 suggestions for that. I think that one's got to be cleaned pretty substantially, though. Patton, let me just say this. I'm not trying to start a whole thing about it. I'm just making this one observation. I would say this. That opening scene in Patton, I'm saying for me now, greatest opening scene in a film ever. I mean, there's no way to top that. Don't even call them. Thus endeth the argument. It's 503-733-2970. Let's break now. That's a fine idea, isn't it? Back after this with Tim Riley in the noon news hour. Later on, more stuff than I can list now. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
Don't say that.
Oh, come on, Adrian. It's true. I was nobody. But that don't matter either, you know? Because I was thinking. It really don't matter if I lose this fight. It really don't matter if this guy opens my head either. Because all I want to do is go the distance. Nobody's ever gone the distance with Creed.
All right, now you're just being mean.
And if I can go that distance.
I'm busy being
that
inspired.
Building, and I'm still standing. I want to know for the first time in my life, see?
This really is a
bone. I weren't just another bone from the neighborhood.
Watch. All right. I see your point. Well, now I just want to nap. It's the Rick Emerson Show. 503-733-2970. Was that from Aaron? Did Aaron send that one in?
Yeah.
Well, you'll note that I didn't play that.
Yeah, that one's actually just depressing.
I think I said yesterday, actually, that he sent me, you got to play this. It's not going to happen. But there you go. So you did hear it after a fashion. 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson, the radio program. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please make way for Tim Riley?
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
So in case you haven't heard yet, the Trailblazers have picked Greg Oden as their first-round draft pick. It's time for the big man to meet the fans. Therefore, as we speak, there's a huge, humongous party going on at Pioneer Square.
Odin, the Norse god of noise?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
It's going to make the...
He'll be riding into the games on his winged Valkyrie.
So...
On his steed.
I guess this will cut down on the line of people waiting at the AT&T store for the iPhone.
Is the thing going on right now as we speak?
As we speak, yes. All the excitement.
Pioneer Courthouse Square.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly what is the nature of the celebration? I mean, I know what
this
they are celebrating.
This is a 7-foot-tall basketball player who
That's
comes
unusual.
From Ohio State.
But what are they doing at Pioneer Courthouse Square?
They're having a party.
I don't want anybody to think that we're just trying to be contrarian by... Let me just put a finer point on it. This is not an act. We're not attempting to be kooky. There's no one on this program who follows sports in any way at all. You know, actually, Scotty might know what we're talking about here.
Scotty J.
Oh, we've got to get a new sounder. I can't even play it all the way through. Over this weekend, I swear to God, I'm just going to sit down and create a new Scotty sounder. Scotty, if you would please come to the studio. I don't want anybody to think that I'm just trying to be an ass or just trying to, like...
No, Raul, it was the greatest day of his life yesterday.
I mean, yeah, it's not like I'm opposed to sports in general. I mean, I know a little bit about a little bit when it comes to sports. Basically, just enough to taunt your boyfriend about the Jazz. That's pretty much it.
I think most white suburbanites know about these things.
Probably.
That's the only time they like to see African Americans.
It is true. If you're going to, or if you're going to talk about some sport where there's a guy crashing through a table after being beaten with a metal chair wrapped in barbed wire, I probably know about that if it took place before 1994. But other than that, none of us on this program know anything about sports. Scotty J, hello.
Yeah, how's it going?
How you doing today?
Good.
Okay, pleased to be telling us about this
Are
guy.
You familiar with this fellow, Scotty?
All I know is what I've watched from the news. And I think he's 19 years old or something like
are
that.
Are you a basketball fan?
And he was like the top or one of the second or no, he's not the second. He was like the top college draft.
He's the top pick.
He was the number one. Now, I know that this makes me sound like a retard because I don't understand how sports operate. And I know that I'm here, we're here in Portland with the Trailblazers and the hey and the whatnot. So what is the deal? Do they literally just like reach into a bag and pick out the name of the team that gets the first draft, that gets to go first? This is sort of like, I know that I just sound stupid beyond all words to every guy. This, you know what it is? This is my instant karma for the Rocky thing. Because I was going on like a jerk last hour about, about being a man and Rocky and sports. Women just don't understand. And here I am having to have the NBA draft explained to me like I'm a 3-year-old who's been kicked in the head by a horse. So... is this essentially like when you are playing softball as a kid or whatever, and there's a bunch of people and there's a team captain on either side and you take turns picking?
Exactly.
And nobody wants the fat kid, and so you're picking like the tall kid first and then the kid with the good leg second and then, whatever.
See, I'm not a sports authority.
No,
like
really?
None of you in this room. But I will say this.
But is that the deal with the draft?
Well, yeah. I believe that it's either been a super long time or this is the first time that we've ever had the first draft.
So, but that means we get to pick first.
You get the best people.
You get the number one person.
You should probably avoid the best people.
Isn't that what this game is about?
Well, I suppose.
Although we can't come out and say that. We're buying the best people.
Yeah, the reason why it's a big thing is because we got to pick whom everybody else wants.
It's true, I guess. So he was in much demand.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, okay.
So hopefully it's going to be 1977 all over
again. And he's like over 7 feet tall, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
But is that even impressive anymore?
He's like 7 feet.
I mean, is that
something?
It is for me. I saw, whoever that big, super tall, Yao Ming.
Oh, the Asian guy who's like 100 feet tall?
It's ridiculous how tall he is. I think he's like 7'6 or something. He looks huge.
Watching this guy play a little bit, or practice rather, it's interesting to see him go up to the basketball
hoop. What is there to this game except throwing a ball through a hoop?
Well, a dunk to this guy is like, you and I just reaching our hands.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And again, I'm not trying to be an ass about it. I just, some of these things are really mystifying to me. Like, again, here's a question. our basket. See how we're being relatable, and yet at the same time, we have no goddamn idea what we're talking about. Is it unusual anymore for basketball players to be 7 feet tall? I'm not. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, are basketball players taller than they used to be? It doesn't seem like 30 years ago there was a bunch of 7 foot tall basketball players.
To me, they stretch them nowadays.
To me, it does feel like
Wonka's factory.
I feel like a lot of those guys were that tall when I was a kid.
Is that true? We used to work when we were at Fisher. One of our AEs, one of the sales guys, had been a trailblazer. A guy named Greg had been a trailblazer, and he was actually on the 77 team when they won.
Wow.
And in fact, you know, inside the office, you know, when you call somebody from inside the office, their name shows up on your interoffice caller ID. So it says, you know, like, you know, whatever. It says, like, Dave Zinn or right. Rick Emerson or whatever. When he would call your desk, you'd look at the phone, and it just said 1977. That was his name. That was how he identified himself inside the building. But it does seem like basketball players are getting, like, a lot taller. I mean,
it makes the game go by quicker. They can score more baskets.
Well, they ought to make the basket higher, don't you
no,
think?
No, no, no.
Don't you think that would make the basket higher or the ball smaller?
Yeah.
You know?
We don't want to make them struggle when they dunk the ball. We want to see
I don't think they're struggling now. I mean, I think that's what I'm saying.
Some of the 6'5" guys might have a little bit of a jump.
Well, you know, let me tell you, as a guy who, because I lived in Salt Lake, well, I lived in Spokane and then Salt Lake City, and both of those, and you know, John Stockton went to Gonzaga. And then Stockton played for the Jazz. And I remember the thing about Stockton is they weren't talking about what a midget he was. And, you know, Stockton was like 6'3", I think. I mean, I think Stockton was over 6 feet tall. But, of course, in the NBA, that made him like
a forward or something.
A tiny little white man. So, all right. Well, who knows what this call is about. We're flying blind now. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. As far as how they depict the draft picks, most other sports, it's usually the worst team goes first. But yeah. With basketball, it's like the worst 11 teams. And then the very worst team gets 11.
Well, let's be honest.
11 lottery balls, and then it goes up from there.
We'd be on either list, though, really, wouldn't we? I mean, come on.
They get, like I said, the best of the worst team gets one lottery ball, and the worst gets like 11, and then they put them in a big thing, and then they draw it out like bingo.
It's all very confusing.
Maybe we ought to reclaim the 1080 spot now that we're
totally.
Yeah, we want to talk sports now.
So, what is it? Are you a sports fan? Well, it sounds like you are. So,
a little bit, yeah.
Are basketball players getting taller? I don't mean to be so weird to fixated on this, but
I don't know if it's that they're getting taller. It's just that they start since professional sports has become so much bigger and such huge profit that they identify these tall kids really early.
Oh, that's true.
And they
true.
Start
probably
training
the,
them all the way through. There's, you used to look at it, and they were still 7 foot tall.
Well, it's true.
They were six, and they were super gangly.
They send out scouts even now down to, like, grade schools, I hear now. Because it's like, I remember they would always talk about, because they used to not be until high school that they would scout some of these kids. Like, I remember they talking about how there was a scout that went out and saw a guy who was then known as Lou Alcindor, who changed his name, it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but at the time his name was Lou Alcindor. And so they spotted him in high school, you know, and he was a high school kid, and they spotted him on some city court somewhere. And, you know, but now there's like, when you were like fourth grader, fifth grader, sixth grader, like literally at recess, there will be some guy with like slick black hair and a briefcase sitting there like in a van watching you play.
And just a small handheld notepad.
Totally. And like, like a BlackBerry, like making notes about, you know, must recruit. So, all right. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
I've got an acquaintance that has, if you've got a 12-year-old son, and he's got a Major League Baseball trainer that's been provided for him already.
Ugh. That's just creepy. I mean, I guess it's okay, but it's just creepy.
Yeah.
Thank you. You ever want to be creeped out by, if you ever want to watch, and again, as much as I'm not a sports fan, I love sports films, there's two great things. One is a Spike Lee book called Best Seat in the House, which is it's like a memoir of a lifelong basketball fan. And then there's a great Spike Lee movie called He Got Game, starring Ray Allen. Ray Allen, is that the right guy? I asked the people.
Allen?
This
I haven't seen anything.
Anyway. Moving on, here's Tim Riley. We never did find out what the nature of the celebration is. Is he just standing there like a king, and they're just sort of people coming by and supplicating themselves?
Right, you're supposed to look up to this person.
Go by, literally. Go by and just go, hey, huge guy. Thanks. Well, all right, there you go. Odin. Star Chaser, the legend of Odin. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Continuing with a sports huddle, an anonymous Wikipedia poster calls it a terrible coincidence that he or she edited the online encyclopedia to report the death of the wife of pro wrestler Chris Benoit. 14 hours before the police discovered the murder-suicide of his wife and 7-year-old son. Former Stamford, Connecticut investigator Vito Colucci says police will find out who posted this.
Whoever posted this, if they would have called the police department or something like that, police could have gone to that house and at least say Benoit and at least get to the bottom of it.
Who? What is this guy's name? Vito? He sounds like
Vito Colucci.
He's a guy who could get things done. He can get answers out of you.
Vito says the Stamford police have been investigating the incident by themselves.
I talked to an official at the Stamford Police Department who says so far, they, as far as he knows, they have not been contacted by the FBI or anything.
You know, I will say this, and I'm, you know, and this story is already kind of fading into the background, but I will say, I quit being a pro wrestling fan. Not like there was some breaking point, but I just kind of stopped watching over the years. But I've grown up as a big pro wrestling fan. But you talk to guys who are now, I mean, because, you know, it's very tempting to lump. It's very easy to say that pro wrestling fans are idiots or whatever, which is not really the case. You know, there's idiots everywhere. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, people who watch it just as a form of entertainment. But you talk to guys who are really into pro wrestling, and this is just... This is like just like the biggest, most traumatic thing that's ever happened to guys who are into that sport and who follow it. I mean, it's just like, it's just the biggest thing, the biggest news that's ever happened in that segment of the entertainment industry. It really is. It really is kind of fascinating. I'll guarantee you, there's going to be some movie or some book out about that before the end of the month. Dan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Rick, how's it going, brother?
What's up?
Hey, just about the NBA draft.
Yeah.
The last time that Portland got the first pick was when Michael Jordan was a rookie, and we passed on Jordan and took some guy named Sam Bowie, whose knees just kind of blew out and flopped.
I remember that. In fact, there is now, I don't remember, I don't remember it happening, but I do, you mentioned this now, and I remember hearing about that, and there is actually now a book, I forget what it's called, but there is a book that just came out last week, and it is an entire book about leading up to that decision for the Trailblazers to pass on Michael Jordan and then to go with this other guy, and about the ramifications after the fact. I forget, it was in last week's Willamette, but if you go on Amazon or ask the library or something, people tell you there's a whole book that came out now about that decision, which, correct me if I'm wrong, seems to sort of, that is like the one day that will haunt the Trailblazers, like, till the end of time, right?
Yeah, definitely. So they're trying to redeem themselves now, and hopefully, you know, they pick the right guy.
Yeah.
I think they did.
Well,
you gotta go. It's not like a safe pick, you know what I mean?
I get. Well, yeah, because you can never. How can you not pick the guy who's number one? Because then if you lose, then everybody just comes in and kick you in the sack for the rest of your life. So that's no good. All right, thank you.
Special letter.
All right, thank you, my friend. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of
Truth. Blazers will be blazing.
Are you? Did you just come up with that yourself, or
I
is that?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
They're probably looking for some new slogans.
Probably. Well, let's hope. Just, I mean, are they still? Do people still wackily call them the Jail Blazers? Or most of the guys who were going to jail for and getting arrested for things, have they moved on elsewhere, do you suppose?
I don't know.
Because wasn't there
they just traded one of them, Zach Randolph. He was the one who was, had some, like, rape allegations and stuff. They traded him yesterday.
And who was, what's his name, that was got pulled over in the SUV and it was, like, full of pot?
Oh, that guy's long gone. He's on the Suns now, I think.
I don't know what it is about Portland, man. It's just something like him. He looks like he'll be arrested for something. Let's get him. I don't know. It was like they were consciously just trying to find guys who were causing trouble. All right, here's Tim Ryan.
Police may have found the body of a missing Seattle talk show host. They responded to a home rented by former Cairo radio personality Mike Webb. He disappeared in April. The body is decomposed. They can't tell very much. It was found under a tarp in a crawl space. Now, Webb was last seen April 13th and reported missing since he was fired from Cairo. Back in December, when he was being investigated for insurance fraud, this stemmed from a 2005 car wreck that caused about $6,000 damage to his Lexus. He was driving around on it. Sure, we've all done it, but there's no reason to commit suicide over it or anything. His trial was thrown out after jurors saw Webb in the midst of a nervous breakdown. He spent 30 days in an inpatient mental facility. So, they found this body in his house.
You typically, one doesn't put oneself in a crawl space, though. That's something that a guy in a clown suit does.
Right. I hope my tenants don't do this stuff.
I hope my tenants. That's mighty Christian of you, Tim. That's, as my mom would say, that's mighty white of you. I hope my tenants don't kill themselves and cover themselves with a tarp in their crawl space. Please don't do these things. All right. Well, okay. But he killed himself, they think?
They don't know yet. They don't even know if it's him yet. But it was the house he was renting.
It's a badly decomposed body in the house.
Mm-hmm. That he was renting, and he's been missing since April. Not that anybody cared to look for him for some reason.
Well, okay. What was his name?
Mike Webb.
I don't think I'd ever heard of him.
Yeah, he used to work at Cairo. Weekends. He was there for like 10 years.
Interesting. Well, okay.
He talks no more.
No.
Let's see. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, whoever you are. John?
Yes.
Hi, what's up?
Hey, man, I just needed to put that guy in his place about the Sam Bowie Michael Jordan thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah?
Because they didn't have the first pick that year. It was like the third or fourth pick. And then it just drafted Clyde Drexler, so they didn't really need another guard.
And so you're, oh, God. See, here, this is how it begins. You know what? I'm not even going to weigh in. I was going to respond to that, but like, what the hell do I know? Okay. So are you justifying, just so I can boil this down, so you are saying that perhaps it is excusable or understandable that the Trailblazers passed on Michael Jordan?
Yeah, at the time, it was. But, you know, in hindsight, no, of course not. But
well, no, in hindsight, no. That's like in hindsight. Like that guy, here's how we can move this to my wheelhouse. There was a guy who worked at Decca, I believe, was the record company, who passed on the Beatles. And, I mean, the Beatles, they said, hey, would you like to send the Beatles? Him, no, rock music. He said, because he said, quote, no, this was his quote. He said, because guitar groups were on the way out, he believed. And he passed on the Beatles. I mean,
yeah, he's probably got a gun in his mouth.
I want a documentary about what happened to that guy, the guy who said no to the Beatles. So excellent. All right, thank you, sir.
Cheers.
All right, there you go. I mean, at least Pete Best was in the Beatles, you know, and then was fired. This guy just said, no, I'll pass. Thank you, no.
All right, here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Justice has been done. A Portland homeowner who's 72 years old shot a 26-year-old man trying to burglarize his home early this morning.
Well done.
The victim was taken to the ambulance with one gunshot wound, and police say he had a life-threatening injury, so that should teach him to mess with old people. Dispatchers received a 911 call from the wife of the homeowner reporting a burglar trying to enter the house on the back porch. This happened in Northeast. It was a 71-year-old husband who fired the shot at the burglar and hit him. Stunned family members say the man was a retired postman and the father of 9 children.
Don't screw with postal carriers. Don't screw with old people.
This happened on Northeast Police at around 5 a.m.
All right.
So there.
Let's see. Oh, this is about the talk show host, I think. Hi, Rob. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, guys. Hey, question. Radio guy died went missing in April.
Yeah.
They didn't think to search the house.
That is interesting, actually, that they didn't look in his home.
And two, if he died in April and the house was rented, that means they probably had a new tenant in there that's been living with a rotting corpse for 3 months.
That is true, and in the summertime months as well.
Yeah, that's fun. It's like the 1,200 pounds of bat going on in a house in New York.
Well, now this doesn't make any sense at all. I demand an investigation. I don't even know what to think. So, I mean, really, I mean, maybe was it in a bad neighborhood or something? Because sometimes, you know, the neighborhood itself just smells so foul, you don't know.
The siding of the house looked like it was from the 1950s, and I personally would have replaced it.
You just have one of your tenants drive through it to get rid of it.
Seems weird how many, times they go in a couple months later into crawl space and find something in a house where something weird had happened, you know?
It is, I mean, that is weird now that I think about it. And why wouldn't they have checked the house? Or did he die?
I mean, you wouldn't have thought to check a crawl space.
No, but, but wouldn't you? I mean,
no.
If you're a cop?
Well, I'm a cop.
I know, but I mean, isn't everything hidden in crawl spaces these days? Doesn't it always end up that, whoever is in a crawl space?
Didn't Damon Stoudemire have that 2 pounds of weed in his crawl space?
That's exactly who it was, Damon Stoudemire. All right, there you go. Fantastic. Thank you, sir.
Have a good day.
All right, Damon Stoudemire. That's exactly who I was thinking of. All right. Damon Stoudemire. Here's my little Damon Stoudemire story. When I had those horrible, embarrassing photos taken of me with the fan blowing my hair where I look like Tawny Katane and so forth.
Those were scary photos.
They were terrible. The worst photos ever taken of anybody. They were at the studio that also did the Trailblazers photos, and Stoudemire was actually due to have a photo shoot. And so the same day that I had those taken, he was the guy scheduled after me. And so as he was getting ready to leave, Damon Stoudemire showed up, and I swear to God, it's the only time I've ever witnessed this in person. He was there with a posse. It was him. And, like, I swear to God,
his entourage.
But a caravan of, like, 4 big-ass black, blacked-out windows SUVs. And it was, like, him and it's like 20 guys who were just there for no readily apparent reason. So that is my my only experience with the Damon Stoudemire. Ryan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
The thing that you're talking about, pro wrestlers or people who are really, really into pro wrestlers.
Yeah.
The best thing that I ever heard about that, the best way to describe it is the fact that pro wrestling is like the soap opera for guys.
Oh, totally. That's exactly.
And you know, you've met women who are so into soap operas that it's like real life. So it's no different, really.
No, I remember, and again, I just, this is when I'm, you know, different when I was, because it was when I was a kid. When you're a kid, you get into things like this more easily. But I remember being a kid watching the WWF, as it was then called. And I mean, really, I mean, even to, up to the age of being like 12, 13, 14, and then I had a lot of friends as an adult who were into pro wrestling, and I would occasionally be over at their house, they were watching something, and, you know, and they'd be watching SummerSlam or whatever, and I'm watching, and I swear to God, it sucks you in. If you're a guy, especially, pro wrestling, as dumb as this sounds, it will suck you in, and you will find yourself caring about it, like, in a way that you really never thought possible. It does seem silly to talk about it now, like here in the middle of the day, but when you're sitting there in front of the television, and you're watching Hulk Hogan desperately try to climb up off the mat rope by rope, you know, as somebody is distracting the ref and another guy's hitting him in the back of the head with a metal chair, I defy any man to not start caring about it. So,
well, because you get all into the action and the adrenaline and everything, and you forget for a moment that it isn't real. It's like watching a movie, but it's real people on real TV.
Look,
so.
I can tell you, I interviewed on this show a couple years ago, Rowdy Piper, and it was just via the phone. He was supposed to come in the studio. He wasn't able to do that, but was on the phone. And I was probably 30 years old at that time, and I have to tell you, I get chills now just thinking about it. The fact that I interviewed Rowdy Piper, who was just, even as an adult, just looms so large in my history. Because I just followed that guy religiously every week, every twist and turn at his story arc. So, all right, thank you.
One more thing.
Yeah.
A couple years ago when the Blazers drafted Travis Outlaw.
Was there a guy really named Travis Outlaw?
Yeah, he's on the team still.
Fantastic.
The announcer, who what he was saying wasn't only being aired on TV, but it was being aired to the whole stadium where the draft is actually happening.
Right.
Well, they drafted him, he goes, Outlaw. Well, that's perfect for the Blazers.
See, only we can say things like that. Other people say.
But the great thing was the guy's dad is a cop, so he was like the cleanest guy on the team, despite his last name.
All right, excellent. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks.
All right, there. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
People from Canby just won't stop getting killed. Here's another one. A Canby man has been found dead.
The Canby man!
Found dead under his overturned all-terrain vehicle. Apparently it's not so funny now, is it, funny man?
Oh, come on! Like that... Like I could pass that off.
So, the 80-year-old
man... What am I going to do? Not make that joke?
The 80-year-old man was riding on an ATV. He was, apparently, he was riding on a Yamaha Grizzly. That's what this thing is called.
A Grizzly Discovery this morning.
It was a Grizzly Discovery. When he came to... I'm going to use that later, too. When he came too close to the bank of the creek and take credit for it, the ATV overturned onto the man, which caused him to fall more than 8 feet onto the creek. He'd been trapped under the ATV for 8 days.
Oh.
But the victim's name hasn't been released, so you're safe. Say whatever you want. His relatives won't come after you.
Sorry. Should be more respectful.
Well, no, I've just accepted the fact that nothing we really planned today is going to happen when it's supposed to. I just keep throwing things out. Well, that story's over.
Let's take another sports call.
All right, here on the Sports Huddle.
Yeah, here on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up about Greg Oden?
Hey, the reason that he's such a big deal is that there's not a whole lot of seven-footers. And there's not a whole lot of dominating big men anymore. They've actually gotten to a faster paced game. And he's actually fast enough to keep pace. So he doesn't just lumber down the court like a land yacht on 5'16".
Like a land
he's
yacht.
Quick.
So that's the thing with like the obvious example is a guy like Shaquille O'Neal. God damn, who am I? What show is this? But like my thing is Shaquille O'Neal is like so much taller than everybody else on planet Earth. It doesn't seem like, it just seems like he could just sort of leisurely stroll from one end of the court to the other and, like, place the ball in the basket, and then there you go, and he's done. I mean, right? I mean, it's like he's so big, there's nobody who can possibly guard that guy.
Well, yeah, Shaquille obviously, was that dominating before he got older, but this guy is as, tall as Shaquille, not quite as big in the body, but he's so much faster that it's going to be even harder to stop him than it was to stop Shaq.
All right. Well, I guess we have... now there's some joke, but I don't know what it is. All right. And Shaquille got really fat, too, didn't he?
He's getting old.
Yeah.
We're just going to call it old and be nice.
Well, I think he peaked with Kazam. Let's really be honest about that. All right.
How do you think the Mets are going to do this season?
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. Let's talk about bocce ball. All right. I'm ending this now. Let's take a break. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And whatnot. All right, coming up later on, Aaron Geek in the City, Duran, Scott Daly, Court, Fatboy, MC Chris, more of Tim Riley, and Rachel McGrath about the iPhone. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Show 503-733-2970. So this is creepy. Somebody just sent me this. This is from the Seattle Weekly. This is, of course, before the before Mike Webb, well, I guess some talk show was up there in Seattle, before he was found dead.
Mm-hmm.
Duct taped to his door is a plain white form saying notice to pay rent or quit premises. So his landlord, without actually bothering to go in and check the house, puts this thing on his door saying, pay the rent or get out. Of course, the guy's dead in his own crawl space the whole time. Well, that's creepy.
Oh, I bet. So this is probably what happened. So he rented it in the meantime. And, of course, between tenants, you get the place thoroughly cleaned.
Yeah.
And that's probably how this happened.
Well, that's unnerving. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Oh, there's a guy.
I mean, none of us crawl into crawl spaces in the house when we lose jobs. It happens all the time.
Oh, I mean, I think about it, but then somebody usually snaps me out of it. Let's see. I just sit in the shower weeping silently to myself while Ione Sky bangs at the door. Let's see. Let's welcome down to the Rick Emerson Show. This is. Are you in Texas?
I am in Lufkin, Texas, Rick.
This is Randy in Texas.
Yes.
And you are standing in line for an iPhone.
No, I'm standing on the corner, and there's a bunch of about 27 people here. I'm waiting for a bus. There's about 27 people over there waiting for their phone. And it looks like huge clouds, and they're about to get some rain because it's about 3 hours till that story opens.
Okay, so wait a minute. So it's 3:30. Wait, what time is it in Texas?
It's 2:30. So I guess they're going to reopen at 6, I think.
Why is the store closed? Are they out of...
No, they closed temporarily, and they're going to reopen at 6 and start selling the phones. That's what they said on the news.
Yeah, it's the same thing nationwide. The phones don't go out till 6 o'clock.
Boy, you know, you really got to hand it to Apple. They just know how to manipulate the media.
Well,
you know?
We're a small town, about 30,000 people, and... it's just one born every minute, man. I just, I wish I had a piece of this.
So it's like a 3 hour long line in Lufkin, Texas.
Lufkin. I was offered the morning show there and I turned it down.
Good morning, Lufkin.
Good move, Tim.
Lufkin with Tim Riley.
I just want you to know, I was standing here. I think I stepped on a butterfly while I'm waiting, so there may be some future time travel issues, but.
That's a fantastic reference. Well done.
I'm proudly calling you from my Virgin Mobile Oyster phone, which sells for about $13, Rick.
Excellent. Why are you in Texas?
Man. I was in Vegas, but now I'm in Texas. I'm just trying to get out of here like everybody else.
Okay, maybe that answered somebody's question, but not mine. Why are you there?
I was born here. I came back here to sell all my comic books. It didn't quite work out for me, so I had to get a job at Jack in the Box. I'm selling the Angus. No, not the Angus. The sirloin. We don't touch the Angus.
I've lost track of what in this phone call is made up and what's not, but it doesn't matter. It's all great.
All right, Rick.
Well, thank you, sir. Let us know if anything bad happens to those folks.
I hope so. Thanks, bye.
Good luck catching your buck.
All right, there you go. All right, then.
There you go.
Lufkin, Texas.
Lufkin. Good. The AM drive show in Lufkin.
I was offered that one and the AM drive show in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Really? In Erie?
Erie, yeah.
What? Okay, first of all, were these music stations?
They were.
What, like country?
Country.
It must have been in Lufkin. And in Erie, too?
Mm-hmm.
God damn.
Two morning shows.
What kind of... what? I mean, Lufkin, of course, didn't even rank. Erie can't be ranked either, market-wise. That's got to be like sub 200, right?
Yeah.
It's like Kennewick is not even on there. Jesus. Good morning, Erie. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Veggie Booty snack food, a popular snack product, is being recalled nationwide due to reports of salmonella poisoning, and it's sold here in Oregon.
As a matter of fact, at Trader Joe's, actually, which is a fine place, but that's where they sell it.
That's too bad.
Do they sell it? Am I right about that?
It might be.
I thought it was a Trader Joe's product. I thought it was actually, maybe now I'm wrong. I don't want to pass along bad information. God, just we don't want to do that on the show. But I thought that the Booty product was actually made by Trader Joe's, but I guess I'm wrong about that.
And so the manufacturer is Roberts American Gourmet in Seacliff, New York.
It is a fine product, the salmonella notwithstanding. That aside, it is pretty great.
So at least 51 cases of salmonella poisoning have been identified nationally, only one in Oregon. You'll know it if you get it, if you eat a veggie booty and you have bloody diarrhea and fever and vomiting. There have been no deaths so far, but you want to die if you have all this stuff going on at once.
You know, imagine, that's one of those ailments that you just can't reveal. You know what I mean? That's just one of those, hey, so what are you thinking of the movies? No, I, bloody diarrhea. You know, I just, I'm sorry. That's just, I mean, you have to come up with something. You want to go, no, leprosy. I'm sorry. I can't. You have to fabricate that with something. And not to be revolting.
Not any more than we already have been.
No, I mean, we really use the phrase bloody diarrhea. Where are we going to go from there? Here's what I don't understand about that ailment. I know the answer is from within your body. But, I mean, my question is really, honestly, where is that blood coming from? You know what I mean?
I'm not a physician.
But I guess I mean, your body's a closed system. Is that, does salmonella cause holes in your stomach or something, and that's how blood gets in there?
Maybe.
Or is it caused like a, I guess I really don't even want to know about this.
No.
But I guess I just am curious as to where the blood is actually coming from. It seems like, does salmonella just cause you to spring leaks inside your body?
Apparently veggie booty does.
Apparently.
So you're told to bring your veggie booty back to the store that you bought it.
Sharp, spiky booty.
Or just throw it away. But don't eat it.
Let's see here. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show about the iPhone. Hello, sir.
Yeah, good suggestion for everyone standing in line for the iPhone. Just buy a handgun for $50.
All
right. Wait till about 6:15.
No, too soon. No, bye.
Too soon, it hasn't even happened yet.
No. Bye now.
See ya.
No, that didn't really work out. All right, let's do another story. Let's not take any calls for a little while. Here's Tim Riley.
So let's talk to Stephen Levy of Newsweek magazine, who is one of four people in the world who's had an iPhone for 2 weeks. He says it's fantastic.
The whole front is a screen. You could get a much better experience with movies and watching the album covers as they go along.
Who watches albums? Seriously?
You can tell he's stuttering. He doesn't like it.
No, and they bought him off by giving him one. And look,
I wish it was me.
I'm not saying that there aren't features that are. I mean, these are features that are, as they used to say, snazzy. But there are also features that are fundamentally useless. That you think there are features that they. And look, I say this about my Zen Vision too, which is what it's like an iPod, which is unfortunately how you have to describe things. But which it's a fine product. I love it. But there are features that they give you that are sort of selling points that you kind of go, that's really cool. But then you realize later the features are they're pointless, that they don't matter. Like the fact that on the iPod, like on my Zen Vision, you can set it up so whenever a song is playing by a particular artist, the album cover art is on the screen. Well, I suppose that's an interesting feature, but really, what does that matter?
I mean, the same thing with my iPod.
See, that's what I'm saying, but it's like what? My wife is the only person I know who does this. My wife will spend hours on the internet for songs that maybe didn't come with cover art or something she just got off a file sharing site or whatever, tracking down the goddamn, she spent, because she's freakish this way, she spent like 35 minutes the other day trying to track down some appropriate album cover art for some like Ben Gibbard, like promo concert only CD that like you can only get if you like go to a show and like cut off big locks of your hair and you know and like and give him locks of your hair in a bag or something that only freakish Death Cab for Cutie fans do. Death Cab for Cutie fans, who are sort of like the new Tori Amos fans, where they're just all unhinged, they're all crazy. God love you, honey, but they're just all nuts. Bitch, I'm like, what are you doing? I need you to check my email. She's like, I'm trying to find cover art for my Ben Gibbard album. I'm like, well, for what possible reason? Well, so it'll show up on the front of the iPod when I'm playing this song. I'm like, how often? Think about the brains it takes to be amused by that feature. What are you going to do tonight? I'm going to sit on the sofa and hold my iPod and stare at the screen and watch the album art flick by while the song plays. That's my evening. That's a feature you will never use, ever. And yet she spent all this time trying to track down the... So whatever, but I don't use it either. Dumb. So that's Stephen Levy, who also wrote the book Hackers, by the way.
The iPhone can do many things.
You can get the whole web on a page, and what happens is that you could stretch it and bring it down and, you know, can focus in on the web, and it's really much better experience than your normal cell phone.
So around here at Bridgeport Village in Tualatin, four people started a line at the Apple Store at 4 o'clock this morning, and all four planned to buy iPhones, and then they're going to sell them on eBay for a profit. A young man from Mexico showed up 2 minutes after 4 o'clock. Daniel Juarez flew in from Mexico 3 days ago and is spending the summer with relatives in Portland, so he claims. He says he's going to buy an iPhone now because they're not available in Mexico till December.
Stay with Tom Potter.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Then at the AT&T store, which isn't far from here, at 410 Northeast Broadway. Let's see, Jason Hayes arrived. Actually, that should be Southwest Broadway. Jason Hayes arrived at 5 a.m. He had seen an ad on Craigslist offering $150 to wait in line. He had the day off, so he got $150. Standard line was a good deal. Then at 6 a.m., he was joined by Jim Albus. He owns a small software firm. He planned to stay for a couple hours. Then he hopes to find someone to stand in line for him for $7 an hour.
It's a phone! I'm sorry. I hate these things because they make me sound like an old person. They make me sound like an old person who just doesn't get it. It makes me sound out of touch. It makes me sound like some Luddite who's out of the loop on everything. But seriously, for the love of God, I'm going to quit being... You know, but you know what? I'm a guy who's going to stand in line at midnight to buy the new Harry Potter book like a retard. So I guess I have
It's a book.
That's what I'm saying. I guess I have no room to talk. I mean, I'll stand in line for the new Indiana Jones film, which is just a movie. So I guess I have no reason to point fingers here.
So there are three Apple stores at Bridgeport Village, Washington Square, and Pioneer Place, and 38 AT&T stores in Oregon, Southwest Washington. And every AT&T store will have at least 30 iPhones in stock, and stores in Portland are expected to have even
three
more.
Three Apple stores at Bridgeport. Imagine the concentrated smugness. If you could harness the smug power of that, you could run.
And I love the store at Pioneer Place. They should advertise with us.
It's a beautiful store. I will say that. It is an aesthetically appealing store with very attractive helpers. Let's see. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you, sir?
How's it going?
Hi, there's something about the Humane Society.
Oh, yes. There is a Dancing Doug benefit show, a guy that passed away about a year ago. They're doing a benefit show at the Columbia River Bar and Grill Saturday and Sunday to raise money for the Humane Society.
So confused about everything in this call. So, what is a Dancing Doug, sir?
Dancing Doug is this guy that used to go to, like, the Arnotta in Vancouver and would dance his booty off to local musicians.
Okay.
He died about a year ago, so they're holding a benefit show. All proceeds are going to the Humane Society. It's at the Columbia River Bar and Grill in Camas. And I was calling because I was going to pimp my band that's playing there on Sunday.
All right, well, we do like the Humane Society here. So what is the what's the place and time and the whatnot for the shindig?
Okay, it's Saturday and Sunday. Bands start playing at 8 o'clock. I'm not really that informed on who's playing, so all I care about is our stuff. So
what's your band?
Pitchfork Abortion, Sunday at 8 p.m.
Jesus Christ.
So anyway, hey, it's for the dogs, okay?
Sure,
it's for the people.
Dogs.
There's enough people. Save the dogs, right?
Yes, okay.
Okay.
As long as it's for people.
Yeah. All right. Is there a website, sir?
I don't know, myspace.com/pitchforkabortion.
As soon as I said that, I knew that was going to be the answer.
Dude, come on. I don't know how to use the Internet's webs. I'm not good with tubes.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Bye now.
Elsewhere from our community bulletin board, Tibetan dancers, musicians, and monks from all over the world will descend on the Coob Saturday for the Northwest Tibetan Cultural Organization's 6th Annual Tibetan Festival, taking short Esther Short Park from noon to 5, featuring performances from Pasang Dolma, that's an acclaimed singer from India, and several dance troupes. There'll also be sand mandalas, pulley artworks, colored sand, and booths to explain Tibetan calligraphy, astronomy, and traditional painting.
Colored sand?
Colored sand.
All sand is colored.
This is Tibetan sand.
All right.
They also have a traditional Tibetan butter tea and momos, which are succulent dumplings filled with meat or
succulent
vegetables.
Succulent dumplings.
If
that's
you're
so great. They're opening for Pitchfork Abortion.
If your club, school, or civic organization is having them enter interest, put on a postcard and mail it 2 weeks in advance to the Tom Crier. In care of this radio station, we'll be glad to announce it free of charge.
Rick, what's the difference between standing in line for the iPhone or standing in line for the new Windows? I don't do that either, by the way. I don't stand in line. I haven't updated my Windows since 2000, I think. I got Windows 2000 at home. I don't stand in line for anything. I don't stand in line for computer products. I didn't stand in line for Halo 2. I can't bring myself to do it. Let's see. Rick, this is from Mike. Rick, this is so great. This is from Mike. Rick, dude, I just got back from Pioneer's Courthouse Square. There's a sea of balding white men worshiping a tall, lanky black man standing on the stage. Women who are one step away from working at Stars are dancing up there. I believe they're cheerleaders. Plus me in the crowd yelling, "Go Lakers." Signed, Mike, black man in Portland. All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. All right. That really is American sports in a nutshell, though, isn't it? That is actually just a microcosm of the American sporting experience. Just a bunch of overweight, balding white guys who look like the guy who downsizes your department, looks like the guy who gives you your severance pay, standing there in a crowd, watching a bunch of skirts on stage shaking it. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, I'll tell you about this bomb in London. A bomb inside the parked car that defused in central London this morning. Police responding to the scene said someone reported a suspicious vehicle was parked in a heavily traveled street. A police officer said witnesses saw a vehicle driving erratically before crashing into some bins. The driver then got out and ran away. The bomb was found not long after that. And, of course, this is only the second day on the job from the brand-new Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, who succeeded Tony Blair.
The whole front is a screen. You could get a much better experience with movies.
He loves the iPhone.
The album covers as they go along.
You know, if you were running all these sound bites off the iPhone, Tim, they'd run much more smoothly.
I know. So here's Gordon Brown, the new Prime Minister, who sounds like someone from Are You Being Served?
The first duty of a government is the security of the people. And as the police and security services have said on so many occasions, we face a serious and continued security threat to our country.
Then they have this new lady who's the Home Secretary. Her name is Jackie, and she has a few words to this bomber.
What I think is very important is that the public remain vigilant at all times. Obviously, the police are investigating, and I think we should allow them to get on with that without undue speculation.
I try to avoid women named Jackie.
This is the exotic Jackie spelling.
Oh, I see.
J-A-C-Q-U-I.
Yeah.
London terrorism expert Peter Newman said the device seemed crude in nature.
Peter Noon?
Mm-hmm. Peter Newman.
Oh,
it looks very much like 1970s IRA rather than Al-Qaeda from the type of device that is being used, because Al-Qaeda uses much more sophisticated and much more effective device.
Al-Qaeda already seem like an outdated villain to me, don't they?
Maybe it's a new one.
Sir, I'm not saying we need new villains. I'm just saying Al-Qaeda seem very... I don't know. They seem very a couple years ago. It didn't
2001.
Yeah, really. Yes, they do seem very 2001.
They were the anthrax of their time.
I'm just saying, their time has passed. I think we're still blaming them for things, blaming all the threats on them.
And the vast majority of people who watch Fox News believe they're responsible for everything.
They've done everything. Everything that's happened in the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, it's all been because of Al-Qaeda. I'm pretty sure that Al-Qaeda hadn't done anything. I'm pretty sure they've gone away. I think that group has splintered and gone away. This is Greg. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up? Why, hello.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, yeah, did you want to hear about why bloody diarrhea happened?
Not particularly, no. I want to hear about the Tibetan festival.
My only question is, where does the blood come from?
It comes from the lines of your intestines.
So does it just make you bleed internally?
Essentially, yeah.
All right.
The bacteria starts chewing on you. And forms little colonies, and the colonies thinning of the walls of the mucus that lines your digestive tract, yeah. And all that acid in there, it goes right through it and bleeds you.
Okay, it bleeds you. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're in need of a good bleeding. All right, here's Tim Riley.
An L.A. County Superior Court judge has ordered Pamela Bach to turn this into authorities in relation with an alleged involvement in a January hit-and-run. The judge said Bach was not booked properly at the time of the crash and is 1 week to surrender. She faced a misdemeanor hit-and-run charge for allegedly hitting a car in North Hollywood and then taking off. Apparently, a witness wrote down her license plate number and reported it. Her attorney said the situation is a misunderstanding, and Bach did get out of her car to check the damage and then probably just took off. An officer has stopped the Wienermobile, suspecting it was stolen. Well, now it's being roasted. An Arizona Highway Patrol officer who ran the Wienermobile's plates. Apparently, he thought it was a hot dog on wheels. Really hot. The Wienermobile was on the road for promotion, which contestants sing the Oscar Mayer jingle for a shot at appearing in a commercial. The 27-foot-long, 11-foot-tall vehicle was in a construction zone in downtown Tucson, slowing traffic. Well, Officer Corey Landcow caught up with it and ran its yummy license plate to make sure it was street legal. Well, the plate came back as stolen. It turned out somebody indeed had stolen the yummy plate off the Wienermobile back in Missouri in February. Oscar Mayer officials reported the theft to police there. The company got a replacement yummy plate the same month and notified police, but the plate came back as stolen. They noted it was okay. Jeff Kendall of Salt Lake City was a passenger or hot dogger in the rolling wiener, not missing a beat. Kendall handed out wiener whistles to the officers who took a peek inside the Wienermobile and snapped pictures.
Okay. I'm sorry. Wiener whistles.
Mm-hmm. Britney Spears feels totally betrayed by her mom, her soon ex-husband, her former manager, and promises the rehab facility that she called home for a month that charges huge rates, and, well, they really don't have much of a success rate. Spears acknowledged having emotional problems after her second child was born, but strongly maintained she didn't have a drug or alcohol problem. Nonetheless, multiple sources say Federline threatened to go public by going to court to wrestle custody from the kids if she didn't go to rehab. She could not withstand the pressure from her mom and checked into Promises February 20th. Then the professionals believe Spears suffered a postpartum depression made worse because she stopped taking Prozac. She was also emotionally crumbling because of a messy divorce and intense media scrutiny. After leaving Promises, the paparazzi waited for the golden shot of Britney drinking again, and she began getting angry that she was at the rehab facility in the first place. She and her assistant, Allie Sims, called Promises multiple times, asking for a copy of the report showing that she tested dirty for drugs and alcohol when she checked in.
Now, have you seen this story about Britney delivering this restraining order to her mother in a trailer park?
I didn't see that one, no.
Okay, Seamus, who previously submitted the failed Rocky... their failed Rocky clip. Just have this from the Daily Mail, as referenced by the Beatles in their hit single, Paperback Writer. Now, this is... This looks like a real story. This doesn't look fake. And there's photos of it, too. I'm surprised that people didn't tell... Maybe this is how far Britney Spears has fallen off the cultural radar. This is how much she's been surpassed by the Lindsay Lohan...
Oh, wait a minute. I think I've seen this. That was from TMZ.
Britney Spears' relationship with her mother, it says, once a Svengali figure in the pop star's life, appears to be at the breaking point. The troubled singer... I can't believe this. This would have been the biggest story in the world, like, 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Britney Spears personally delivered papers to her mother in a trailer park, which are said to be a restraining order to keep Lynn Spears away from Britney's sons, Sean, Preston, and Jaden James. Okay, I'm looking at this right now. There's a whole series of photographs. God damn, she has never looked trashier. There's a whole series of Britney Spears photos. She is, she's wearing cut-off jeans, a torn wife beater, and nothing else. She's got a gut, and she's sort of chunky. And her cutoffs are the homemade variety, and here's how you can tell. Because, you know, like if you have a pair of jeans, they're cut off above the pocket line, which means that she's wearing these cutoffs, but the little white pocket, the inside of the pocket, is actually down below the cutoff line of the jeans. I mean, that's just, you don't do that. So here she is in a trailer park handing the restraining order to her mother, who, I can't note this enough, is living in a trailer. What the hell is wrong with this family? I mean, apart from everything. Have you seen these photographs, Sarah, of Britney?
Yeah, and you're totally right. She has fallen off because I saw them and I didn't even feel like posting them. Because she's just so uninteresting and annoying to me now.
It's just unreal. I can't believe that someone must... Well, she must just not have any handlers anymore. Her handlers must just...
She's fired everybody.
Yeah, that's why she... I mean, not like I'm some fashion plate, but I'm not Britney Spears. I can't believe that people let her go out in public like this. I mean, dear God.
She must be stopped.
Well, it's... No, I mean, the people talk about the bloom being off the rose. I mean, there is no rose. She's all stem now. She's just all dirt. There's no rose
left. She's back to wearing those dingy white flip-flops that she used to wear all the time.
God. All right. You know why? Here's what I think it must be. It must just be, Britney must just think that her star power is just so everlasting and luminous that she can just turn it back on with the flick of a switch. She must just let herself be seen like this in public because she's convinced that at any moment that she wants to become famous again, she can just flick a switch and it'll be 1999 all over again. Yeah, that's not going to happen. All right, well, whatever. I'm beyond caring. Here's Tim Riley.
A couple of quick updates. They found a second car bomb in London, and Greg Oden danced on the stage after riding a MAX train to a rally in his honor. The crowd chanted, Oden, 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 after the 19-year-old confessed his love for Portland, rain, downpour, and all.
Fantastic.
All right, so that's that.
Is it over? Is it done?
It's probably still going on.
I was so afraid it was going to happen during a rush hour. I was so afraid it was going to be like 5:30 when it was going to be like 10,000 swarming nitwits down there to stare at a guy. So, all right.
There's still tons of nitwits all the time at Pioneer Square.
I wonder if they let the homeless people stay there for that or if they just come and sweep them all out. Like, I wonder if the gutter punks get kicked out by the cops for an event like this. All right. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Hi.
Sorry.
What the hell was that? Is that like he was choking?
Those veggie sacks.
See, he's got the salmonella. I'm sorry, this bloody diarrhea.
All right, here's Tim Riley. So anyway, that's it.
Ready. I don't know why they call it that. They don't call that. But they call Portland Rip City?
Yeah. Some of these people do. I guess all the basketball people call it Rip City for some reason.
I don't think I've ever heard that
yeah,
place.
Yeah, I have.
I thought Rip City was it was someplace in California because of the surf.
No, you're thinking of Surf City, USA. That'd be Huntington Beach.
Where is that? Where there's two girls for every boy?
You bet there still is.
All right. It's Tim Riley.
So that's that. Penelope Cruz had a panic attack aboard a continental flight from Newark to Barcelona last night. She appeared to be traveling alone. She was in first class and became agitated after the plane left the gate. After she spoke with the cockpit, the plane returned to the gate, and she deplaned. A fellow passenger said she was freaking out and refusing to fly.
Excellent.
In the process of her deplaning, the flight removed all the bags, which were left to sit in the rain as a little punishment for her. So the airline did find her luggage quickly.
What is the last movie Penelope Cruz did? Go. Anyone.
Something with Selma Hayek?
Yeah, was she a lesbian or
doesn't
something?
Doesn't she just sort of seem like Selma Hayek's ugly little sister?
Oh, that could be.
Don't you just sort of, I mean, I know there's many people who, I guess, there might be many people who find Penelope Cruz attractive. I guess Tom Cruise found her attractive, although that's, I suppose, a relative statement. But she is just like a less appealing knockoff of Selma Hayek. Selma Hayek is the gold standard, and Penelope Cruz is just sort of, Penelope Cruz is just sort of like when you can't get Salma Hayek, and then like you can't get any number of other women who might look kind of like Salma Hayek, you get Penelope Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
But she must, and I guess she did maybe something with Salma Hayek, which does seem inevitable. Those two being in a film together just seemed like one of those things that was bound to happen sooner or later. All right. Somebody's going to explain the Rip City thing. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Oh, man, I can't believe you never heard the Rip City thing.
Maybe I haven't. I just didn't stick with me. But, I mean, I've heard the Stump Town and Bridgetown and City of Roses.
It's kind of a gross statement. It reminds me of a flatulence problem.
Rip City.
No.
I don't know. Those burritos are taking me right to Rip City.
not to my knowledge. No, I think it's an old throwback. I think Bill Shonley used to say it all the time, and it was just kind of a catchphrase. And
that's
then,
the guy in the appliance store commercial, isn't it?
But what does it mean?
Well, I believe it is the sound that the basketball unit makes when it goes through the hoop and rips through the twine.
That's more like the sound the passengers make on the MAX train on the way home in the afternoon.
This sounds
not kidding.
You know what this sounds? This sounds like what is that phrase? It's not bactionary. There's some phrase about a retroactive definition. I forget what they call it, but there is a phrase that they use for things that have been retroactively defined. I'm thinking of backronym. There's a phrase called backronym, which is where there's an acronym that nobody knows the origin of, but they try to come up with one after the fact. This sounds like a retroactive explanation that probably doesn't. That seems like a very convoluted way to come up with the phrase Rip City.
No, I think you might be onto something. Like he spurted it out one game, and then they had to figure out what the hell it meant.
Spurted. All right. Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Bye now.
All right. It was after he ate those veggie snacks.
All right. I don't know what that means, Scotty. Does the name Shane Rose mean anything to anybody?
No.
Is he the, is he the Iraq guy? Scotty, is that who that is? Okay, yeah, all right, okay. This is just checking. All right. Now, there's a guy, a listener of ours, who was listening to us when he was in Iraq on one of the interwebs. And I told him to come by and we'd show him the studio and say, hey. Okay, I didn't know who that was.
Oh, that's
okay.
Good.
Well, we'll talk to him during the break. All right, okay. Great. Here's a long time back. Who wants to, I don't even think I have her sounder anymore. It's Carol the Token Italian.
Oh, that's the best sounder ever.
But didn't she go crazy?
Well, she was mad last time. I can't remember why.
It was not just mad, though. It seems like she
something about kids.
It seems like...
Was it about children?
She went nutty about something or other. All right, well, hold on. Let's...
Hey! I'm all up in his grill.
Let's... Carol, the Token Italian. Hello.
Hello. I'm back from my mental breakdown.
All right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you not go crazy?
I kind of flipped out because it... pisses me off the way you guys hate children so much.
Well, we don't hate children. We just don't want them around us and near
them.
Well, no.
Okay, and that's just where we differ.
Let's be clear. Let's be clear about this. We don't hate children any more than we hate most people. We just hate most people. And I have no problem with other people having children as long as I don't have to be around them when I don't want to or take care of them or babysit them.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm back from my mental break.
Yeah, you went all kooky on us.
You called up
and just screamed at us.
Oh, man, I was totally whacked out, yeah.
Were you on some kind of the drugs?
No, it wasn't the drugs. It was the boss at the time.
Oh, I see.
Was just totally wanking me out and then the phone call and just, you know, you got the front end of my displeasure.
So we paid the bill.
You paid the price, man.
All right.
Paid the price.
That's
but
okay.
I do apologize for that, and I'm all better now.
Well, that's okay. What's up?
Now, the thing about Britney Spears' mama living in a trailer park,
yeah,
that's total crap. If you go to people.com, Britney Spears' little sister is on a Disney TV show on the Disney Channel. That is her dressing room trailer.
Also, this
the mom is like
set.
Managing the little sister now. So,
but look how easily we just believed that her mom was living in a trailer park. Look how naturally...
We like that story better.
No, but look how that explanation just didn't rattle us at all. Like when it was like, here's her mom living in a trailer park. We all went, well, okay. Well,
yeah.
It just seemed to make absolute sense.
That's a nice Airstream, you know, so...
It does seem like it's inevitable. She sort of is the musical Tanya Harding. It does seem like it's a thing that's bound to happen at some point.
Yes, but that's what it is.
But now, were these court papers that she was delivering?
So they say nobody can really prove. Could be a babysitting list for all anybody knows.
But they don't get along. There have been documented, like, screaming matches between
right.
them in public.
Yes, but
so,
it is...
How do I even know this?
If you go to that, you will see she's not, you know, down on her luck and living in a trailer park.
Well,
that's the sister's dressing room.
I think we find the trailer park story more interesting, and so we'll continue to say that.
Well, and it's more interesting that she's turning out to be more like Tanya Harding than we all
it
know
really
thought.
Is true. She is becoming a woman of size,
yes.
too, if you look at that. She's becoming bulky.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Carol.
Okay.
Bye now.
I'm all up in his grill.
All right. One more call, then we break. We'll come back. Rachel McGrath, who's talking about the iPhone today. Tom, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hello, Rick.
Hey.
I'm calling with the Rip City explanation.
All right.
1976-77, when we actually won the championship, Bill Shonley was the announcer. Every time he made a switch, he'd say Rip City, and it caught on, and when we won the championship, it was even included in the song that they came out with.
Was he consciously trying to create a catchphrase by saying Rip City?
I think it was just a catchphrase that they just turned around to use.
All right. Because it doesn't seem like there's any plausible reason why he would use that phrase unless he was consciously trying to create some sort of a nickname.
You know, it's like every sports announcer has their little phrase for when something exciting happens.
That's true. That's
that
true.
And that was his, you know, when something exciting happened. Rip City!
I guess that's true, because they do have the that guy who was the Cubs announcer for the longest time, and he said whatever the hell he said, and then Marv Albert has the yes and whatever.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, fair enough. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. There you go. All right, we should take a... was that a hmm indicating there was breaking news?
No.
Sometimes you go hmm and it means there's a breaking story.
Not this time.
That was just sort of a, I wasn't really listening to this sports talk, but now it's over, so it doesn't matter. Hmm. Fantastic. Back after this, we'll talk to CNN radio correspondent Rachel McGrath around the corner. Later on, Court, Fat Boy, Aaron Duran, Scott Daly, a review of Die Hard 4, The Transformers, Sicko, Harry Potter and MC Chris. It's all on the way. You stay right there. to Rick Emerson Radio Program in just a moment. We will talk to CNN Radio correspondent Rachel McGrath, who's blathering about the iPhone. Not that she's blathering. I'm sorry. That's a terrible thing to say. I don't mean she's blathering.
Yeah, that was awesome, Rick.
I'm sorry. I know she's on hold. I don't mean she's blathering about the iPhone. I just mean, you know how I feel about it. We had a guy waiting in line, you know, for like 9 hours or whatever. Some guy emailed me. He's like, I'm in Pittsburgh. I'm waiting outside in a pup tent. So it is a little much ado about the tiny little shiny thing. So we'll talk to Rachel about that. I love Rachel. You know that. It's 503-733-2970. Before we do that, let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, Shane. Shane, how you doing? You had to step right to the microphone there.
Do I have to touch it or anything?
No, it's fine. Right. Scotty will. Make Scotty do the work for you. It's a week. So,
hello, everyone.
So Shane and his lovely wife, Brenda, stepped in here. Now, you are on leave from Germany, right?
Correct.
And what branch of the military are you in?
I'm in the Army.
The Army. And so you were in Kuwait and then in, what was the place? Where in Iraq?
Ramadi.
Ramadi. And so this is the dumb question that I ask everybody. This is sort of like how now we ask every guest what their favorite Billy Joel song is. How hot was it when you stepped off the plane? Literally, like, what was the temperature?
We had a guy in our unit who had a watch that recorded the temperature as he moved, and it was 128 the moment I stepped off the plane.
Wow.
And that was straight from Germany with air conditioning the entire flight.
So with air conditioning.
You got the full exposure immediately.
That's like the reverse of wind chill. What was the hottest that it got?
142 while
See,
I was
that
there.
That doesn't even seem like, how can you even live?
So that's why all those people are always mad over there.
Well, seriously. I mean, I think
it'd be like Texas. It's a Muslim Texas.
Well, actually, interesting enough, my medical school was in Texas. So
you were, well, it's like, I mean, and we sort of laugh about that, but seriously, that must contribute to the general instability there. It's hot, there's no water, and every crevice of your body is filled with sand.
Yeah, and I mean, 90% of the time, your average soldier just wanted to sit in the shade.
There's a whole lot of, I mean, I won't pretend to know much about the military, because I really don't, but I remember watching that Jarhead film with Jake Gyllenhaal, and it was a whole lot of just wanting to sit around and not move.
Yes, during the daytime, I mean, you just sweat, and you don't want to lay in bed because it's so hot and it'll just stick to you. And at nighttime, that's the only time you really get to eat or do anything that you've been waiting to do. So,
So basically, they're handing out melted Hershey bars to Iraqi kids.
Have some wilted dead flowers. All right. It was very cool, though. You brought a series of small gifts for us here. You brought Tim a vegetarian
meal.
MRE.
Is this from Halliburton?
I don't know. I'd have to check.
I noticed that there is nothing about its origin on here.
I think that is on purpose, actually.
I had one of those MREs one time. It was like lasagna or something. It was like eating a soft brick of cement. It was the worst thing I've ever eaten. And it has, because isn't the deal with those MREs that if it's like your only meal for a day or two, they want it to be enough, so it's like 5,000 calories?
Oh, yeah.
It's heavy.
Oh, yeah, you can feel it, like, in your stomach, like, you know, like, it's a crushing meal to try to eat.
There's also, I mean, there's an amazing amount of variety in each bag. Even the same bag with the same name will have various items, and it's kind of like jailhouse where you trade, you know, like, trade you a carton of cigarettes for your brownie.
I'll give you some Parliaments for that Tabasco.
Exactly.
And then Sarah has camouflage.
Yeah, like
a camouflage makeup kit.
Face paint. I'm so excited. Cool.
What is this?
That is the real deal.
Yeah, so. Thank you.
What is the name of this clothing item you brought me?
It's a German Army field sweater.
Totally. And so I can.
Does Germans fight anymore?
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So I met several German snipers while I was in Iraq.
Oh wow.
Fantastic. So they still like to fight.
I never actually witnessed them do anything, but they were there.
Wow. All they do is fight and wear a lot of black turtlenecks. Before we're so under the gun today, so I apologize. We're going to have to kind of move forward here, and we have to talk to Rachel, who has been very patient and been held here. I know there was a guy you wanted to give a shout-out to because you have been able to listen to the show over the interwebs, right? Is that you got the podcast or you've downloaded the show or something even overseas?
We were allocated some time for internet use, and I made a point of downloading off of iTunes here.
How great is that? I mean, you could be doing anything. You could be looking at porn. You could be, you know, whatever. And that yet, this program is what you do. So really not to like make it all about us, but I wouldn't think that the government would let you just like have access to talk radio.
It is supervised. There is some regulation. And,
did they have like a Baghdad Rose there?
Attention American GIs, you are fighting a lost cause. It's like some woman like the MASH woman, yeah, the Tokyo Rose thing in the operating room, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't immediately work-related for me. So.
We're all the propaganda you need.
Yes.
All right, so go. You have a guy you want to give a shout out to.
Yes, just real fast. I wanted to say to Schroeder, ha ha ha.
Is he still over there?
He is in Germany right now and listening to you at this current moment.
Excellent. All right, so Schroeder, hello, and howdy, and whatnot. Thanks for listening.
You need to give him my barely knew her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm so, oh, that's true. I hadn't even thought about that. Schroeder.
I barely knew her.
Thank you. All right. Oh, and this is a retro with Sniper.
I barely knew her.
And when you headed back over?
We are scheduled to go back. I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you when, so I'm not.
Tell me when. Tell me the exact coordinates.
Tell me from where.
Tell me the longitude and latitude and what you'll be wearing.
But we are leaving relatively soon.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and be safe, and thank you for your service and your continued service. And thanks so much for the bitch and sweater. That's going to get me babes.
Thank you very much for the entertainment.
All right.
We appreciate it.
And this will get me vegetarian babes.
Shane, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Shane, ladies and gentlemen. Excellent. All right. Ladies, she's been very patient. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. I'm so sorry for making her wait. Let's welcome now CNN radio correspondent Rachel McGrath from Los Angeles. Hey, Rachel, how you doing?
Well, thanks for all the time that I've had to prepare my blathering voice.
I'm sorry. I feel like an ass. I didn't mean to imply that you, Rachel McGrath, were blabbering. There's been an ongoing series of discussions that you have not been privy to in this program about the iPhone, because there is some contentious division within the Rick Emerson staff about the iPhone. And how much of this is hype and how much of this is reality, and to what extent Americans are just having the bright, shiny, proverbial wool pulled over their eyes by Steve Jobs. So I apologize for that. I did not mean to imply that you are conveying information that is less than crucial. Clearly, that's not the case.
No, because I trained for many years to be a hard news journalist, and I'd like you to be respectful of that.
No. Okay. I'm sorry. So what is it? Sorry, you said that they have you stashed outside some store in Cupertino or something? I mean, where is it? Do they have you just sitting there watching?
I have been down hobnobbing with the people waiting in line at the malls here in L.A. What can I say? It's getting hot out there. The lines are getting longer. The sun is getting hotter. And I've retired for a little bit of shelter because, you know, I'm surrounded by lots of people who range from the geeks who just want an iPhone because that's it, it's the latest thing, to people who are just so excited about having one handheld device that could access the internet and be their cell phone and be a camera and be their iPod and be this and be that and whatever, and they just can't wait. And there are people out there who are just beside themselves with anticipation. And then, of course, there are the ones who think, maybe I can make some money out of this. And they're in line because they're going to buy two iPhones, which is the maximum allowed, then they're going to try and sell them on the internet.
Which I think is, so this is sort of like what happened the PlayStation 3. Let me just tell you this. I saw the greatest thing on the internet when the PlayStation 3 came out, and it was a guy who slept in line for like 3 days, waited there. He was like the first person there. He had a tent. He had food. He had whatever. Waited in line, got a PlayStation 3, and as soon as he got it, he took it out of the sidewalk, and then in front of all the other geeks, just smashed it in little pieces with a hammer.
Oh, wow.
It was fantastic. Just to see a bunch of fat guys in Star Trek shirts weeping openly like their mother had died. It really was a glorious thing. So, let me ask you this, just to, not to be all Hunter Thompson about it, but to inject yourself into the story for a moment, do you, in your heart, Rachel McGrath, have any iPhone lust?
You know, I'm intrigued. I have to say, all I've seen of the iPhone is the great big sort of display in the store windows. And I'm kind of intrigued, the excitement that people have about it when they're telling me what it can do. I can barely make my own cell phone work. So you know what? One, I'm intrigued that we can actually do this kind of thing now in something you hold in the palm of your hand. Secondly, I'm concerned that if I had one, would I be able to use it? Probably not. But you know, I'm intrigued. Having talked about it all day, I want one now. I want to see one. I want to, you know, play with it.
Well, I mean, the one big selling point I will say about Apple products is that they are very user-friendly. They're very intuitive, and I know I'm like the millionth guy to make that observation, but the best Apple anecdote I can even tell you is this, is that when I was a younger man, when I was, I don't know, 17, 18, something like that, and the very first wave of Macintoshes were out there, that sounds incorrect. It sounds like you ought to say Macintosh or something, but the first Macintosh computers were out there, and I would sort of sneak into work secretly late at night to update my resume because I was trying to get a job somewhere else, and the Macintosh was the only computer that was left on that I could log onto, and I remember not being all that computer savvy, but instinctively knowing how to do everything I needed to do on the Macintosh. I mean, just being some idiot who didn't know anything about computers, it really was the very definition of intuitive. I mean, it was just self-explanatory.
Yeah,
so,
and I think that's the thing about the iPhone, this whole idea of having a touch a touch screen so that you don't have to press buttons or go through huge menus. Everything should be available to you just by touching the screen and taking you where you want to go. And I think that's one of the things that, a lot of people, you know, waiting in line are quite excited about.
Absolutely. All right, before we let you go, Rachel McGrath from CNN, I have to ask you this. What is your favorite Billy Joel song?
What's that one, the Italian restaurant, bottle of red, bottle of white?
Scenes from an Italian restaurant.
Yeah,
that is actually a popular choice. We've been asking, we're canvassing the world with that. We're asking everybody their favorite Billy Joel song. Excellent. Enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you in the near future. Thank you so much, Rachel.
Bye-bye.
There you go. CNN Rachel McGrath. CNN Radio Corp.
Blowing it.
I didn't. It was fine. She laughed. She laughed. My explanation. I wasn't implying she was blathering. She knows that. She's smart. She's British. Of course she's smart. Just listen to that voice. She sounds dumb? No. This is a bitchin' sweater, though. I gotta tell you this.
Yeah, that's super cool.
It is very cool. This looks warm, too. All right, this is one of those... You can tell it's a military sweater because it weighs like 100 pounds. So, all right, so there you go. And he gave Scotty something, too. He gave... Shane gave Scotty some small gift as well. That camouflage makeup is...
He said this is the stuff that they actually wear.
It's totally cool. I never really thought that when you're in the military that you carry, like, a compact... I mean, that's what it is. It's like a little makeup thing with a mirror.
Yeah.
It's a compact. It just happens to just be, now, this is a dumb question. Is it just the traditional camouflage colors in there, or
there's
is there...
five of them. There's actually, like a beige-y color.
So there's, like, desert camouflage almost
in
there,
too?
Yeah,
like a light moss green, and then brown, green, and black.
Weird.
Yeah.
There's military stuff.
I wonder if they have, like, classes on how to put on your military makeup.
They must. I mean, because otherwise, how would you know? That's strange. It's stuff you don't even really think about. 142 degrees.
Ugh.
F that. Stronger man than I am. There's no way. All right, we got a break. Here's what's coming up. Jesus. We got Aaron Duran from GeekInTheCity.com. Court and Fatboy. MC Chris. We'll talk to him at the top of the hour. We got a spoiler-free review of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Die Hard. Sicko. Transformers. Scott Daly. All of that coming up. Flash Friday with Tom Likas at 3. Don and Mike at 7. You say there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's just, it warps your brain to think about the fact that that guy Shane was just here talking on a microphone to his friend Schroeder, who then is going to be listening in Germany. It just, it makes your, I mean, you can't think about it too much because it just twists your brain in half. 503, I know, yeah, I barely know. 503-733-2970. Oh, this is, somebody's clarified this. So it was, Tokyo Rose in World War II, but in MASH, they had the propagandists, whatever, the chick, her name was Soul City Sue. But I don't know if she was a historical figure or not, or if that was just sort of their version of Tokyo Rose. But so there you go. Soul City Sue, that's exactly who it was. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen at the Ministry of Truth, it's the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
There was a Soul City Sue.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was a female announcer of a series of North Korean propaganda radio broadcasts during the Korean War.
We should totally offer our services to be propagandists. I think we've talked about this before, about just offering our services to the government. We should just completely sell ourselves to the highest bidder. Just lease ourselves out as propagandists. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Anyway, she first went on the air August 1950. She would read out the names from dog tags of killed American soldiers to a musical accompaniment. Later that month, she was identified by the Methodist Missionary Association as an American-born Mrs. Anna Wallace Sewell, wife of a Korean newsman. The group said that Sewell, at the time in the mid-40s, was a former missionary school teacher in Korea and had tutored American diplomats' children in Seoul. Her defenders claim the Dell tone of her broadcasts as proof that she was forced to make them.
And that, well, that's the thing, right? It always ends up being some American woman who's done this, or some American-born...
somebody's stuck there.
Yeah, somebody that's... All right. All right, let's see. What are we... and so, I'm just trying to keep an eye on the clock here. So at 2 o'clock, we got MC Chris, and then next hour we have... Aaron Duran. It's Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. And then we have Court and Fatboy coming up as well. All right.
The showcase of stars.
Really, the showcase of me falling further and further behind schedule. Here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
A movie about a plot to kill Adolf Hitler will film in Germany in spite of a ban because Tom Cruise is a Scientologist.
Hitler.
I barely knew her.
Germany does not recognize Scientology as a religion, but they know who Hitler is. Defense Minister Franz Josef Jung said earlier this week that the filmmakers could not shoot at any military sites if Cruise is involved. However, the head of a German film studio claims to have all the necessary permits to shoot in unrestricted areas of the military site in Blendersbach. Cruise will play
Colonel from Germany sounds
Klaus
angry.
Franz Stupenberg in the movie Blunderblock, set to be released next year.
Didn't we do this story last week?
Or yeah, even an update.
Even this week? See, I think you say that sometimes to cover, but I think sometimes it's not an update at all. I think sometimes we're just doing the same story over again. And then I say, "What? This seems familiar." To go, yes, there's new information in this. I don't often believe that's the case. Sometimes I think we're simply reading these stories again because they're amusing, which is fine. Yeah, the world is running out of news. But all of those, it doesn't matter what it is. You could, there could be like some German book for children that's about like a fuzzy rabbit's adventures in the friendly forest full of shimmering ponds and golden calves. And it would be called like, you know? And that would be it. It was just a whole bunch of language entirely made out of like phlegm and sharp pointy sounds. It's like all their words are made out of metal somehow.
Oh, you know what else is in Germany right now? Marilyn Manson, who was turned away from a Cologne cathedral because he was wearing lipstick. A Christian group in the U.S. have branded Manson a pawn of Satan. But Manson doesn't think the cathedral staff recognized. You tell the reporters, they didn't let me in because I was wearing lipstick.
You know, he's getting it on with that girl from 13. Evan Rachel Wood, is that her name?
He's 13?
No, she's not. Well, not anymore. She's 19, I believe.
She's still very young.
She really is. And that's who he, well, I don't know the story. There's two different...
So have you seen that video?
No.
The heart-shaped glasses video from his new album?
No, I didn't like
the song.
Where
they're humping in the video?
Really?
Like, full on. It's disgusting.
Is her dad standing off stage yelling, faster, harder? Thora Birch's dad is there giving in with a megaphone.
Deepa!
Oh, I wish I had my megaphone. I could totally do the little thing. Because he was with Dita Von Teese, right? Who's like that? She's that burlesque. Boy, is she just hot as balls. I mean, really just unbelievable. I mean, maybe she's not. She wears a lot of makeup, so you can't really tell. But I suspect that she's just a knockout, like, all the time, 24 hours a day.
I've seen her without makeup. She's very pretty.
She's unbelievably pretty. She's really, really hot. So I don't know who dumped who. It seems so strange to me, though, that, and I know that I make this observation about a lot of rock stars who then run into trouble, domestically, but it does seem like if you're going to be dating a rock star like Marilyn Manson, I just sort of assume that when you date a guy like Marilyn Manson, or that when you date, when Heather Locklear marries Tommy Lee, don't you just always assume that there's some sort of understood whatever? I mean, doesn't that just seem like that's the case? I sort of figured that there's just an understood arrangement or something that happens there. Sort of Gene Simmons, Shannon Tweed style. Because that was Dita Von Teese's whole thing as well. I can't believe he cheated on me. Really, what world is she living in? I just assume that there is some sort of tacit understanding about what happens on the road stays on the road. But maybe not. Or maybe there was. Maybe she was coming over to the house or something. I don't know. I shouldn't do that. I don't even... All I know is what I read in Spin magazine. Well, I was waiting to get my hair cut at Bishop's the other day, so I'm just going to shut up about this. Here's Tim Riley.
Now, authorities in London...
Microphone off.
It is?
Yeah.
It's hard to tell, really. I guess it'll be turned on eventually. Is this ever going to be fixed?
This is what makes us huge in Germany, is this sort of technical proficiency. And no, it's never going to be fixed.
If we were in Germany, this would have been fixed a long time ago.
And they would have killed the person responsible for breaking it.
Heinrich, to the alley! A police in London's bustling nightclub and theater district tonight defused a second car bomb that could have killed hundreds of thousands after an ambulance crew spotted smoke coming out of it. Meantime, there was another one earlier today. This is the second one. Although he's not pointing fingers, Lord John Taylor of Britain's House of Lords says Muslim terrorists have to be considered as possible subjects.
I'm not going to jump to conclusions because, of course, it's only hours since this bomb was found. But I'm afraid we have to at least consider Al-Qaeda, the Muslims,
of course,
radical Muslims, as being culprits. We have to. We'd be unrealistic not to.
You know, I want to start calling myself Lord Rick Emerson. I mean, even for the British, now that I think about it, that's a thing that I never really pondered before. I mean, whenever it is that the British started calling themselves, because that is a class distinction, is it not?
Yes.
I mean, or is it a merely political distinction? What does it take to become a lord in Britain? Like, how do you arrive? How does that happen? Are you born a lord?
No, I believe you're appointed a lord there.
By somebody?
Lords in Britain.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm sorry.
Nothing I've studied in the past. We're a somewhat continental show. There's many people on the show who've traveled and been to other places. Because here's my question. I don't know when Britain started doing this, started calling people lords.
They have the House of Lords.
Right, but that's their upper tier of their bicameral system, right? As opposed to the House of Commons?
Yes.
See, but even now that you think about it, that's one of those things you don't really ever ponder. But that just seems unbelievably weird and sort of snotty. Like, you could never get away with that here, having a House of Lords and a House of Commons.
You can be a landlord.
I suppose. But whenever they started calling certain people in Britain lords...
So he belongs to the House of Lords.
But I guess my point is, whenever they started that system of calling certain people lords, even then it must have had the double meaning of like a godlike connotation, right? Because that's basically like calling it the House of Gods, isn't it? I mean, if you're House of Lords, if you are Lord John Marbury, that is basically saying you are God John Marbury, which is fine. Don't get me wrong. It's just sort of strange. I'm going to begin. You're the Reverend Tim Riley. I think I may start referring to myself as Lord Rick Emerson. Just see where it gets me in life.
So apparently, these are created by the King of England before the Act of Union of 1707.
Thanks for clarifying that. That really answers the question.
Under passage of the House of Lords Act of 1999, all peers of England could sit in the House of Lords. The ranks of English peerage are Duke, Marquis, Earl, Viscount, and Baron. While most newer English peerages depend on only a male line, many of the older ones, particularly older baronies, can descend through females. Under English inheritance laws, all doctors are co-heirs, so many English peerage titles have fallen into abyss between various female co-heirs. Understand?
Yeah. Yes. With crystal clarity.
For instance, there are dukes, there are marquises, there are earls, there are viscounts, and then there are lords.
So the Duke of Earl was sort of a play on words, because a duke and an earl are both titles.
Well, no, Earl was a place.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that where they got the title Earl from? And let me ask you this while we're talking about this.
God.
What? Do you not like to learn things? Why do you hate America? Was there really an Earl of Sandwich who created the sandwich, or is that an urban legend?
I'm not sure.
Exactly what points
I don't see an Earl of Sandwich on the list here.
There's
an Earl of Salisbury. That's the old, wait a minute. There was an Earl of Sandwich.
Wasn't that SNL spent the Earl of Douchebag?
There was an Earl of Sandwich. In 1660.
Did he create the sandwich?
I'm looking here.
I wonder if the sandwich was actually named for him. That's one of those things. That's like you always hear that thing about how the toilet was invented by a guy named Crapper, which can't possibly be true. I mean, I'm not even going to bother to look that up because I know it's not true. So I always wonder about... And think about the idea that you invent the sandwich. I mean, who... The idea that someone invented the sandwich is just strange. It's just a puzzling concept. It's like the idea that somebody invented the wheel. I mean, inventing the wheel is really... And how think about that. The wheel...
Oh, my gosh. There's a whole list of Earls of Sandwiches here.
Oh, God. So it could be like... So this is...
Sandwich starts to lose its meaning after you look at that word for about 10 seconds.
Yeah, totally. And
now
it just seems like
now
weird
it
letters.
Really weird.
Now I've got to find the right Duke of Sandwich.
Trying to find the right Duke of... It's like, It's like trying to find the, like, It's like trying to find, like, the right, You know, Shane McInnes in Ireland.
It says the sandwich was named by John Montagu, the fourth Earl of Sandwich.
Okay, so is sandwich a place?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. Okay, we found the right Earl of Sandwich.
Okay, can I just stop, though, and note an observation? Note how the Internet simultaneously gives us all this knowledge, but helps us understand nothing. We have all these facts, none of us understand any of what we're reading. Mm-hmm. We have all these facts, we have zero understanding.
Well, I'm trying to figure out.
Now we're just lapsing into silence.
Here we go. I found out what we're looking for.
Okay, Tim's got it.
Jesus. The modern sandwich is certainly named after Lord Sandwich. Contemporary accounts refer to the sandwich often with a capital S. And the date of invention was 1762.
So that one day there was no sandwich, and the next day there was a sandwich?
Mm-hmm.
Did he just run out of the house? Eureka! You know,
well, the exact circumstances of the invention are subject to debate. A rumor formed by popular myth is that bread and meat sustained Lord Sandwich at the gambling table. Others say he ate a sandwich at his desk.
I have the gambling table theory, too.
Really?
It was dried meat and bread.
Because he would ask someone to bring him some meat between slices of bread. Later, when others asked for the same thing, they'd say something like, I'll have what Sandwich is having.
That's made up. I call BS on that right now. There's no way that that's a real story. If you had bread...
It was popular in Rip City by the Earl of Sandwich.
If you had... I mean, clearly bread existed and meat existed. Are you telling me that no one on Earth had thought to put one on top of... That's what inventing is. That's what we've come to now. The inventing was putting something on top of something else.
I mean, before they invented the Egg McMuffin, did anybody think about it?
No, that's true. And you know, that guy who invented the Egg McMuffin died broke.
It's well, they true. Already sold them for like 99 cents.
Wow, thanks for bumming everybody out.
No, it's true. Also, the guy who invented
And alone.
The... in a flop house. Covered in sores. His body eaten by rodents.
The in candy a... man.
In a Seattle crawl space. Thank you. Call back. No, McDonald's, as I understand it, had this deal that anything you invent is the company's property. And so, like, the guy who invented the Big Mac, I think he got, like, $100 and, like, some gift certificates. Thanks! You know, and then they just, like, kicked him out of the room. All right. Yeah, that sandwich thing is fake. Because inventing is more than just stacking a thing on something else. Which, or maybe it's not. I don't really know. All right.
Well, who's around now to dispute it, really?
My whole thing is that the guy, there's nobody shafted more than the guy who invented the wheel. Because nobody knows who that guy is.
Les Schwab.
No, he invented the... I don't think he invented... I think he invented a way of giving big pieces of meat to people, but not on bread. That was just on a tire. Future civilizations will think that that was what we ate. They ate sides of beef on a tire. Some guy... I don't know why we call it the wheel. That's another thing. Somebody had to name the wheel. Who got to name the wheel, do you suppose?
I don't know.
And was the guy...
People are so obsessed with the wheel.
It's fascinating. It's the most important invention in the history of the world, and no one knows who created it. There's a pile of bones in a hole somewhere. That guy created the wheel, never gotten credit.
You think the wheel's the most important invention?
But the guy,
Donnie Darko.
But the guy who sang "The Lion Sleeps Tonight." What?
Antiseptics are the world's greatest invention.
I dispute that. Antiseptics. You know who created the modern theory of antisepticism? Joseph Lister. Where Listerine comes from.
And that's one to grow on.
And now you know the rest of it. It unnerves me how well I do that, by the way, that voice. I don't really have the voice down, but the mannerisms, I've got it.
All right, we're calling MC Chris in 8 minutes. Do you know what you're going to talk to him about?
No.
Let's take questions from the audience.
Oh, no. That one, by the
what
way,
I like... your favorite biblical
book? Wasn't Fat Boy supposed to come in here and help us?
Who do you think created the wheel?
I like that thing. You know, the thing is...
about sandwiches?
No. The thing is, he might find that conversation interesting.
Are you familiar with the Earl of Sandwich?
And I do know a little bit about MC Chris. Here's the thing about MC Chris. He's one of those guys that I thought I knew nothing about until I started looking him up on Wikipedia, and I kind of realized, oh, I know that guy. Because he does this genre of hip-hop, and I actually don't have anything to play by him, unfortunately, but it's called Nerdcore. Like, MC Paul Barman, I think, is another guy who does that same thing, where it's the fusion of geek culture and gangster rap, and it just sounds like the worst idea ever, but it's actually kind of cool. Anyway. Really? A sandwich call? Why not? Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
I was just saying, I mean, obviously, the sandwich was invented by Earl of Sandwich. I mean, haven't they been telling us that for 20 years? He was gambling, didn't want to get up from the table, and I didn't read it off the internet either. And Thomas Crapper invented the toilet.
See, that's fake. That's fake.
No.
There's no guy named Thomas Crapper who invented the toilet.
Yeah, Thomas Crapper is the guy's name. Before that, crap didn't mean anything.
You have no evidence to support that assertion. You are making...
And I don't even have the internet, but have the lovely Sarah or the proficient Tim Riley do
it. Let me ask you this. If you're wrong, what do I get to do to you?
Expose my real name because you don't like the nickname.
All right. I can do this. How's this? Now, this is flat out stolen from Don and Mike. I'm going to give a little heads up on this. I'm stealing this from Don and Mike. Don't call me and say, you're dealing with Don and Mike. I am stealing this from Don and Mike. If you are wrong about Thomas Crapper inventing the toilet, you got to give us your phone number on the air and we'll give it out.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Now, hold on. So before you do anything, I'm going to put you on hold with Scotty, and Scotty's going to verify that we have your correct phone number. Hold on a second. Scotty, pleased to be talking to line one there. Talk to line one. Pick up the phone. You talk to line one right now. Get his phone number. Call him back to make sure that it is his number. And then if it turns out that Thomas Crapper did not invent the toilet, we're gonna give his number out on the air. Okay, fine. We'll get you. Quit arguing with me about whether he's right or not. Just get his phone number,
Scotty. He's right.
It's no use. So just get his phone number right now. Let me know when you got it. I know we're running a little behind on things here, but these are the moments that count.
Oh, and police have just confirmed that it is the body of missing talk show host Mike Webb that was found under a tarp of his Queen Anne home that he was renting in Seattle.
All right. All right, so hold on. So here's the deal. If this guy is wrong about it being Sir Thomas Crapper that invented the toilet or whatever, we're going to give his phone number out. You may then use that phone number any way you wish. And that punishment is stolen from the Donna Mike Show. Let's have no illusions about that. All right?
Okay.
Well, okay, put him on hold, please. All right, this is him. Scotty's put him back on the warm line. Oh, for the love of... Okay. All right, is this you, sir?
Yes, it's
me. All right, let's go to the... Sarah, have we looked up whether Thomas Crapper... Let's go to Snopes or someplace.
I found the history of toilets.
Okay, we're going to...
International Museum of Toilets.
The International Museum of Toilets, sir.
Okay.
Did or did not Sir Thomas Crapper invent the toilet, Sarah?
We found the answer to your question. The first valve-type flush toilet was introduced in 1738 by a man named J.F. Brondel. Of course, the water closet had been invented 150 years earlier by John Harrington. There's a rumor that John Crapper invented it, but he did not invent the toilet. They could not find his name anywhere.
And by the way, I'm looking at Snopes.com, which is the definitive urban legend site to verify or debunk. And Snopes.com says, false. The flush toilet was not invented by someone named Thomas Crapper.
Okay, look, I'll take my routine blows here, Rick.
No, Scotty, please now come to the studio with his phone number.
Okay, all right, go ahead and release it, but I do want to say first that guy who was hanging around Pioneer Courthouse Square and said, go Lakers, is a chump.
All right, whatever, dude. All right, please now to, and Scotty, please, okay, can we get the mic on Scotty? Scotty, please do apologize for telling me I was wrong.
Could you just make sure a lot of hot chicks are listening? Because I'm actually a good-looking flatbed.
Sure. Y'all get right on that.
I do find it kind of strange, though, because I've grown up knowing about the crapper.
It's fake. So what? That doesn't mean it's real.
I had a book that even had the trivia in it about the guy.
All right.
Turned upside down.
All right.
Yeah, it was in my bathroom almanac.
This right here?
Go ahead and release it, because my only source was a little bit of a Bette Midler skit I heard 10 years ago.
Oh, now the backpedaling begins. All right. Okay, bye now. Okay, now I got to hang up because your phone's going to be needed. All right. His number is 503-849-0121. 503-849-0121.
You're so mean.
He agreed.
So he's not going to do his real name then.
503-849-0121. Just use that however you like. He agreed, by the way. He's on the air.
All right, should we get Fat Boy in here? Because we have to call him in 4 minutes.
Let's do that.
Crazy. Can you
summon Fat Boy?
Yes, I will.
Yeah, thank you so much. All right. I don't even know what we're doing now, other than ruining that guy's phone number. All right.
The Candy Man.
Thank you.
Oh, Sandwich is a place, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Is it one place stacked on top of another place? I know, that's a dumb joke. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Shut up!
I know.
I can't believe I didn't get more of a chortle from...
The Candy Man.
I can't laugh at my own thing. I can't laugh
Scotty
at my own
humor. Scotty worked hard to excerpt this.
The Candy Man.
Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Court and Fat Boy Show, a weeknight 7 to midnight on Rock 101 KUFO. Our good friend Fat Boy, hello, sir.
Could you play that again?
Yeah, do you know the context? Do you
want to? Can be man.
I don't need context. That's funny.
There was a story where Tim said a can be man was killed today when. And with,
can be man.
And I just, without even thinking about it.
I don't need context for that. That's gold.
Can be man.
All right. That's what I do.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Hey, the toilet not invented by a guy named Crapper.
What?
As one of our listeners is finding out right now, his phone number 503-849-0121.
He's finding this out right now?
Well, we bet.
He's like, you know, the toilet was invented by a guy named Crapper. And I'm like, hey,
he was
no.
kind of aggressive about it.
He was a dick about it. He's like, I'm telling you, the toilet was invented by a guy named Crapper. And I said, you know, that's an urban legend. No. And so I took a page from Donna Mike,
mm-hmm.
and I said, you know what? Well, let's make a bet. And if you're wrong, I get to give your phone number out on the air. And he was wrong. He was, like, completely wrong. So, he's getting his life is going to be interesting for the next few days.
Why would you make that bet when Wikipedia exists?
Because you're retarded. All right. So, or maybe you just don't get enough calls and you're feeling lonely. Oh, we should call. I wonder if I can even get through.
Probably won't work.
happy man.
I guess Thank you for calling Mud Jobson.
What? Mud?
Apparently he's not answering his phone.
Okay, 2 minutes. We got 2 minutes.
Oh, okay, so MC Chris is going to be on with us.
Okay.
What should I ask him? Because basically he's a nerdcore rapper.
Yeah, you can ask him about nerdcore, what exactly that means.
Right.
Because from what I understand, it's a very strange form of hip-hop that is based on sort of like gangsterish type stuff.
But it's
they rap about Dungeons & Dragons and things of that nature.
And it's actually my fault for not bringing any of his music. I've got my friend Nate made me a mixtape. It's like him and MC Paul Barman and...
Yeah. I like him much better than Barman.
Yeah, it's insane.
Barman's a little forced.
Kind of thing.
But I mean, Chris is at least trying to be entertaining and funny with it. Barman's just kind of esoteric and boring.
Now, is Del the Funky Homo Sapien, is that nerdcore, like the Deltron album?
No, it's not quite nerdcore. He's nerdy, but he's also like a big acid head. So that's just more him being stoned and...
So here's what I got.
The mouth.
I got nerdcore. He's like, you know, I got that. I got that. And he, of course, you know, he was Sirloin on...
Sirloin and MCP Pants. That's a spider from hell.
You know, Philo Farnsworth is so pleased at the way his invention's being used. Someday I will create a television in a barn and they will use it to entertain adult men who are stoned.
Also,
by having a character named MC.
Sort of like a P.T. Barnum of classic geek movies. He's been running around the country lately showing film like Ghostbusters, Galaxy Quest.
Like in theaters? Or?
Yeah, like... This is what weirded me out. He sends out bulletins on his MySpace.
Uh-huh.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, he invited a bunch of his friends to come watch it with him in Hermiston.
Hermiston.
What is a nerdcore rapper that is the voice of MCP Pants on Adult Swim doing in Hermiston?
Let me tell you right
now. That's a question to ask.
Hermiston is where they need things like that. Have you ever been to Hermiston?
I had a roommate from Hermiston, and I wanted to punch him in his face.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, the world has an anus, my friend. Hermiston is a terrible place.
I don't ever want to go. Don't they have like a melon festival or something like that?
I believe it's the world's watermelon capital.
Really?
Look at that. Dust festival. Come on down to Dirt Days in Hermiston.
All right.
Well, okay. So, are we calling him or is he calling
us? We're calling
him,
guys. Calling him right now.
People don't call us. No. let's see. Ow. I just cut myself with a pen.
Yeah. Actually, I think he got famous even before the Aqua Teen stuff by putting his first album up for download for free.
That's cool.
And he had a song called Fett's Vet, where he raps about Boba Fett being a pimp.
That's so great. All right. Yeah. Well, do you want to hang
over
this?
Cool.
I'll hang up.
Let's see. Oh, but while we're doing this, let's talk to our good friend Colin. Colin, you saw Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix last night.
Yeah, I did.
Now, we'll be giving even though the book has been out for some time, obviously, let's try to have this a relatively spoiler-free review. So you saw this, good, bad, in the middle, how was it?
It was pretty good. If you're a fan of the book, there was, of course, a lot of stuff left out. You know,
because they have to cram, you know, it's like 800 pages into 2 hours.
Yeah,
it's
a 2.5-hour movie.
And so this, I mean, was it, was this a done, finished, completed film? I mean, there was no, like, missing scenes or anything. This was, like, the actual finished film?
Yeah, it was all full, you know.
This was a screening at Lloyd Center. Was the audience just full of nitwits?
No.
Okay.
What?
You sound over-the-top enthused about this.
All right, so was it good or not? What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. It was the best out of all the movies so far.
Oh,
really? Now, that's a bold statement because Goblet of Fire was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't think that one was actually pretty good. No. I think I'd have to say between this one and the first one's better, but...
Where do you, on the classic 1 to 10 scale, where do you rank Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix?
About a 6, probably.
Really? All right, excellent. Fantastic. No. Do the kids look too old for the part? I mean, are they able to make it look convincing?
No. I mean, they were pretty good at it.
Because I guess I'm not... They're doing the movies about one every year and a half or so. Something like that. So I guess they're aging a little bit faster than they should. But I guess they're still looking decent.
Yeah, they'll look fine, you know, with the hormones and the teenagers these days.
I can tell you the scene that I'm waiting to, you know, my finger is just bleeding. That's unfortunate. And I cut myself.
What are you doing?
I cut myself with the thing.
That's because you're a freak and you're always playing with your pen and that thing.
You know what I cut myself on? It's the part that, like, hooks it inside your pocket. It's the little pocket clip on my pen. I've actually cut my flesh with it. Let's see. So the scene that I'm really curious about in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix is that sequence where there's the... God, I don't know how to describe it. It's that room at the end with the glass vials that are all full of the prophecies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like thousands and thousands of glass crystal balls almost that have got the prophecies inside them. I mean, and then that's... And he's being chased through there by a bunch of Death Eaters, right?
Yeah, that place was actually really creepy, I thought. That scene.
It looks like it's really, like, off the charts creepy. So, excellent. Cool. Well, thank you so much, my friend. 6 out of 10. Thank you, Colin.
All right. All right,
there you go. That's Colin. Fantastic.
I didn't know how to take his review because he contradicted himself like 5 times. It's the best one. Well, it's not as good as the first one, but it's really good.
Here's
I give it
thing.
A 6.
Here's the thing.
That's like a D.
With that guy, let me just say this. You got a little backstory about Colin.
Yeah.
Any review that doesn't involve him coming here and setting fire to the building is okay.
Okay. So,
just trust me on that.
All right.
All right. Let's see. What are we doing here? This is... Chuck. Chuck, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up, brother man?
Hey, Rick. Hey. Yeah, the Earl of Sandwich was an actual person, and he sponsors Captain Cook's South Sea Island exploration, where he discovered the Hawaiian Islands, which were originally known as the Sandwich Islands.
All right. Excellent. All right. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
Right, have you already referenced that classic Saturday Night Live skit?
Oh, yeah, the Earl of Douchebag?
Oh, yeah.
Listen to this guy. Hey, I think you stole that phone thing from Don and Mike.
Yeah. All right.
thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I'm going to take a little break here and come back. It's 503-733-2970. On the way, Aaron Duran and Scott Dowley from FilmFeverRadio.com. We're going to talk Transformers, about which you are going to weigh in a little bit because we got the Transformers bet coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Die Hard 4, Sicko, more of Tim Riley, Flash Friday with Tom Likas at 3, Donna Mike at 7. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming by. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. All right. Hey, Rick, I have called the crapper guy several times so far. He's going to hang himself soon. He's already changed his voicemail and sounds real pissy. By the way, Sarah says he's hot as balls. All right, thank you. Thanks so much. James, God bless you. All right, it's 503-733-2970.
Scotty, please to be answering that phone.
Thank you. All right, so it looks like we do have MC Chris. We'll be talking to him here in just a skosh, as our Asian friends say. And then we'll be talking to Court and Fatboy from Rock 101 KUFO, talk about Detroit. And I don't know this for sure, but it looks like the Transformer screening has been moved up once again. You see, Michael Bay's the intent on just unleashing it upon the world like some sort of visual smallpox as early as possible. So first it was 7-4, then it was 7-2, and now, but it's actually not even that. It was like Monday night or something.
Yeah, Monday night at 8 p.m., and they're going to do the same thing that Pirates did earlier this year.
Suck.
That was just my first response.
There was
a screening last night, and people called us immediately following. I think it was Mailman Chris who called and said that it was awesome, that it was amazing. It was by far the, and I know this isn't saying much, but by far the best Bay film ever.
Whatever you say, friend. All right, 503-733-2970. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. You know him as Sirloin and Nerdcore Rap. Rapper extraordinaire, MC Chris. Hello, sir.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
What's up, my brother? Let me ask you this right now. Now, you are a man who knows people. You've got connections. You're on the inside.
Those things are true.
Have you seen the Transformers?
Not in person. I don't know them. I haven't seen the movie. I played with them when I was a kid. I'm going to do a screening in Eugene, Oregon on Tuesday night. We got screwed up by them moving the movie around. We thought we were seeing it first screening midnight on Tuesday night on July 3rd. But I guess they screened it like last year sometime, so everyone's already seen it, so I'm a little late on this one. But it's going to be a cool show. Paramount sending everybody that's going to my screening like posters and game coupons. And Hasbro sent like 5 boxes of stuff, so that's all going to be in Oregon. I'm excited for that.
So I know you got like a vested interest in the movie being good, but what is your gut instinct as a fan? What's your gut instinct on the Transformers?
I don't know. I like seeing state of the art stuff. I have more of a personal attachment with G.I. Joe, so I'll be pissed off when they screw that up. This one I'm not too invested in. So it's kind of like, I'm just excited. I call this like a nerd Christmas, you know, like this is a day that nerds are really happy about. And if that's kind of happening, I make sure that I'm kind of, I'm there and I'm like, hey, here's a bunch of free stuff. I'm a part of this.
Let me ask you this about G.I. Joe. Now, am I remembering this incorrectly, or did Cobra actually have, like, sometimes he wore a mask, but other times it was like this weird, like, sack over his head?
No, there was a hood that you had to order in for. The silver mask is his battle armor that he would wear, like, primarily in battle, and the hood is for when he's, like, in his command center yelling at Destro. So there are two Cobra Commanders.
That's awesome.
Well, actually, like, a third one if you count, like, the weird white Darth Vader version, like, while G.I. Joe is kind of turning into, like, anything goes neon crazy world.
Fantastic. I remember having, I can't remember where I was, but having some sort of like geek off with some friend of mine where we were trying to remember when they created, so now it's just going to be another G.I. Joe talk, when they created Serpentor. And
it was the day my pubic hair showed up.
Fantastic. You watched the Serpentor commercial. Now I am a... I remember the commercial. It was like, the thing I remember about Serpentor is that they... I can't believe I even remember this much, is they listed all of the great military leaders and exactly which parts of their essence they had extracted to create Serpentor, and the only one I remember is that he had, and I'm quoting now, the cunning of Hannibal. That's all I remember.
I think it was like G.I. Joe is all about there being like eight parts to something. Satellite is broken up into eight parts. This warrior needs eight parts. So like everyone has to go on eight missions basically in eight different kind of, you know, like forest, desert, ocean. Everyone would go on a little mission to find a part of something, you know, that would eventually become something. It was very limited plot movement. Plotting.
Now you did. You left a Cartoon Network for a while, but then you came back for the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie, but you got like a new animated thing in the works, right? That you're going to be doing at some point.
I have a long term goal that I want to make. That I like kind of dream about every day, and a part of my being involved in the music industry right now is to meet as many people as I can and have them be a part of this show. So that's kind of like my emperor's ulterior motive kind of for being a rapper right now. Although I do enjoy it, and I do meeting all the kids and like having a lot of fun and traveling the country and stuff like that. But I really, you know, I like to think that I've been kind of given two halves, like half cartoon, half of a rap like situation, and I'm excited to kind of use my entire brain on one project. So that's something I would like to do. So I think I'm going to make like three more records, and I'm going to start making music videos immediately and slowly ease into, you know, giving myself kind of a video representation. So far, I'm just kind of 2D. There hasn't been any stuff that I've kind of made myself, and there's like 180 fan films that have been made, but I haven't done anything officially. So I'm talking to all kinds of people. I'm talking to this guy who makes something called TV Carnage. He might be making a video for me. A lot of my friends are currently involved in this like comedy YouTube boom, and they're all making movies, and everybody's kind of like making shorts right now, so it's a great time to kind of like dive in and have a little fun.
And then you obviously we should say right now, actually, you're gonna be at Dante's tonight, MC Chris tonight at Dante's, and then I know that the Transformers thing is not just a one-off. I know you're doing like sort of a cavalcade of geek films that kind of in different places all around the country.
We're gonna do, I mean, not so much a cavalcade, we're just doing two this summer, but we just did Ghostbusters last spring. And we kind of, like, cheered Rick Moranis every time he came on screen and, like, booed every time something bad happened to him and kind of made him the hero of the movie. This summer we're going to do Transformers. Then I'm going to go down to Texas and we're going to see Cloak and Dagger.
Cloak and Dagger!
With Dabney Coleman.
Let me ask you this right now. I hate to interrupt you. Is or is not Cloak and Dagger the first motion picture based on a video game?
I don't know about that. I'm not like a wiki head. I'm not like a genius about anything nerdy, but I do know what I love, and I do know what I loved as a kid, and I love that Betamax of Cloak and Dagger because it had that role-playing open, and it was kind of like had some spy stuff and some father issues and video games and all this kind of stuff that I like. And I actually haven't seen a frame of it since I was a kid, so I'm really stoked for that screening.
It's the lost Henry Thomas film. It really is. Real quickly, we have our good friend Aaron Duran in the studio. I'm just gonna have him just do a little something for you. Will you please, and you know exactly from Ghostbusters what I'm talking about, will you please, Aaron, from memory, do the Rick Moranis speech.
Put me on the spot, man.
Do it right now. Don't choke. Hold on now. Go ahead, Aaron.
goes to the Gazarian. He will come one of the pre-chosen forms. When he came in the full wretched of the Draenei, the chosen nude form, that of a giant snore. Many shrubs and jewels knew what it was to be roasted in the depths of the snore of that day, I can tell you.
There you go. That's all from memory. Fantastic.
My favorite line that he says in that movie is when he says, yes, have some.
Yes, have some. We do that constantly.
That's how we answer.
That
yes,
comes out of
some.
Our head like 1,000 times a week.
That's the best.
Is it true that you did something in Hermiston, Oregon, and why in the name of God?
I don't even know where that is.
Okay, maybe not. Somebody had told me you were doing a thing in Hermiston, Oregon.
People like hear a high pitch, and they just assume. It's like I get asked so many things, like, hey, did you do this hockey commercial I heard on the radio? I'm like, no, they probably just pitched it up. So sometimes people spot me or hear me in places that I have never been.
Well, no, it was a MySpace bulletin. You were inviting people to watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with you, and you said
okay.
You were in Hermiston.
Now I know what you're talking about. Okay, yeah, sometimes we'll be stuck. And I love to see movies, and I'll just blog it, and I'll just be like, hey, come meet me. I'll be at this place.
That's so cool.
You know, and then kids, pretty much anywhere in the country, kids will show up. Today we had a problem where all of my merchandise was shipped to Eugene, and I need to have it for tonight's show. And I just made a blog. I'm like, can anyone drive this up? And I got like 60 people said that they would drive, you know, the 2.5-3 hours to deliver the merch. And some people were like trying to like, you know, get the gig by, like, bribing me, being like, I'll give you an original sound wave and it's packaging. I'm like, why are they offering me presents and they're doing me a favor?
Take it. Yes, sir. Yes. Say yes. Talking to MC Chris, this is a dumb question. Do you have, I mean, is it just like mcchris.com? Do you have any of MySpace? Do you have, like, a webpage?
I got it all. I got mcchris.com, myspace.com/mcchris. I got a Facebook. If you go to mcchris.com, there's links to pretty much everything that my presence on the net, which is pretty extensive.
All right, MC.
I must say so myself.
mcchris.com and also on MySpace and MC Chris tonight at Dante's, right downtown Portland,
yes,
Oregon.
Please come to the show. Please come check it out. Dante's is a great venue to me. They've always been awesome. I've played there like maybe 4 or 5 times already, and I'm excited to go. Two girls have offered me a tandem massage before the show.
I was going to ask if they were nerdcore groupies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of them are pretty nasty. you know, a lot of them, you know, they got piercings all over their face. It's like making out with a bag of jacks. A lot of the times I'm not really interested, but every blue moon, there's like a super dope hottie who's like, I'll do anything. I'm like, great, because I have all kinds of ideas.
Fantastic.
And it sometimes works out in my favor.
All right. Real quickly, before we go, before we bring the curtain down on this, MC Chris, what is your favorite Billy Joel song?
I know what it is. It's, let me see what it goes. It's like, Brendan Eddy, you're waving goodbye. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Brendan Eddy, we're cleaning something, we're cleaning the king of the prom. Riding around the... Drop top down on the radio one. You know what I'm talking about. Nobody looks any finer. Remember those kids that ask the diner. Blah, blah, blah. You know how it goes.
Is this scenes from an Italian restaurant?
It is. Well, no, it's not.
Maybe it is.
This is the part where it's like it starts kicking into high gear and like things don't go well for the couple.
It sounds awesome. Okay. Fantastic. My MC Chris, mcchris.com, also on MySpace, and tonight at Dante's. Go see him
live. Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate the support.
Thank you, my friend. Best of continued success. Thank you, sir.
Peace.
All right, there you go. MC Chris.
You got to turn that into a recycler.
Dude.
That rendition.
Every single person today has said scenes from an Italian restaurant. That's amazing. Lisa Goddard said it. Rachel McGrath.
I like Stiletto.
I like Pressure.
That's a good one.
And Pressure, which I think they ripped off for the Tetris theme, by the way. but just last time you listened to the Pressure, think Tetris. All right, we're here with Court and Fatboy, Scott Daly and Aaron Duran waiting in the on-deck circle here. We'll do that here in just a second. Tim Riley coming up. All right. Transformers.
Yes.
Okay, so, God damn it. So, first it was the fourth.
Yes.
Then it's the second.
Yeah.
Now it's the first.
Actually, no, it's
we're
the second.
Not changing the bet again.
No.
It's Monday.
Yeah, Monday's the second.
Okay,
it's
the
like
second.
Monday. It's Monday night.
It's Monday night at 8. And added yet more showings. We're not changing the bet.
No, we're not counting those. I was never going to try and count
but
those.
But how are you even going to do it? Are we going to have to sit down with like pen and paper? And
no,
like,
from what they did with the Pirates of the Caribbean one, they don't count those in the sixth day. They're just going to count the full opening. So there will be two figures
they?
To publish. Box Office Mojo.
Mojo. They don't count that?
They won't count that. They'll count it in the overalls, but when they talk about the sixth day weekend, they're not going to count the 8 p.m. and 10 p.m.
All right,
screenings.
So the deal is, Transformers, $160 million, 6 days now?
Yeah, 6 days.
All right, from Tuesday through Sunday.
That's correct.
Yes, indeed. And the deal is if it makes $160 million or more, your show will sponsor this one for a week. And if it makes if it makes less than $160 million, then my show sponsors yours. Right?
Yes.
It's brought to you by.
Exactly.
All right, okay, there you go. So,
And you are going to lose. Uh-huh. I can tell you that right now. All of the reviews are starting to change online. Everybody's starting to say, you know what, this is actually supposed to be. This is a really good movie.
Did he like rope-a-dope it, though, by just playing it, by letting people think it was going to be terrible?
Well, I think what it is just it's a case of lessened expectations.
Yeah.
It's a movie based on a toy line.
I suppose.
So everyone's going in like, it's a movie based on a toy line. I just want to see some explosions and things go plooey.
And apparently they use, there are lots of explosions, and they use all of the catchphrases. Yeah. Brian says roll out several times, apparently. Mm-hmm. So
let me just say this, though. Here's the thing about the Transformers. The Transformers movie is like the iPhone. I have, in that, as regards me, because I am now so personally invested in being opposed to it,
yeah,
to both of them,
right,
that it doesn't even matter. What the iPhone, they could discover now that the iPhone cures cancer, but it's like I have invested so much of my own now personality in, like, it sucks! You're all fools! You know? Like, I have invested so much of my own persona in it being, dug in against this Transformers movie that I now could, even if I go see it and it's the next, like, third man, I can never admit that. Like, I can never... even if the Transformers blows me away, I will have to come in and lie and say it's terrible. I've just invested too much into it. So...
But you're going to see it, though, right?
I will not pay to see it.
Hmm.
If I can... if somebody lets me in, I get a pass. If I can find it...
I think the lying has already begun.
On the interwebs?
You're going
to
pay.
I will not contribute.
You just told
money.
Us you wouldn't admit to it.
Well, I won't admit to the quality of the film.
Okay.
But I won't. I'm saying this. I may see it.
All right.
But I will not give money to Michael Bay. If I can see it without paying, I'll do it.
All right. So with the Transformers and the iPhone, you just apparently thought your life needed a little extra disappointment. You need to just burden yourself. Like, life was going too well. You need to be pissed at something.
Well, it's the only... It's like one of those... it's a thing. It's the only thing that gives my personality definition.
Oh, okay.
I am defined by my hate. No hate, I just vanish in a puff of logic.
Yeah, and you and Court should get along real great.
Yeah.
Then.
We're going to make out later. All right. Rock 101, KUFO, Court and Fatboy, 7 to midnight tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And then you guys are on vacation next week.
Yeah, all next week. And since we have you here, just real quick, RoboCop, Friday the 13th, Baghdad Theater.
Dick Jones!
That's right.
All right. He's a cop killer. I love that movie.
All right. That's great. So many lines that I can't quote because you'll dump me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can say the Clarence Boddicka line.
Bitches leave.
There you go. Well done. Thank you, sir. All right. You should have said that to MC Chris. I bet he would have been down with that. All right. Back after this. Court and Fatboy Kids. Aaron Duran, Scott Dowley coming up right after the break along with Tim Riley. Like us at 3, Dynamike at 7. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Don't forget, Tom Likas coming up at 3 with Flash Friday. Don and Mike at 7. And tomorrow, Car and Driver Radio, 6 to 9. Miles around with Dennis Pitchenbarger, 9 to 11. My. What a busy, busy day. Ladies and gentlemen, we're joined today by Scott Dally and Aaron Duran from FilmFeverRadio.com. Hello!
Hi.
How you guys
hello.
Doing?
Well, hello.
You guys have come down the busiest day we've ever had.
That wasn't true. We're not supposed to even come on. I was just going to sit back. And
I was dancing, man.
I don't want you to think that we're not acknowledging your presence. Sorry. Don't do that. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Shot between the eyes.
Yeah.
A 26-year-old punk had tried to break into some old man's house. Well, he messed with the wrong person.
Not so funny now, is it, funny man?
71-year-old Leroy Hutton shot the burglar between the eyes.
So that'll teach him.
Is he dead?
Not yet. Day ain't over yet.
Also, then there's a strange story about the Woodburn brother who ran over his sister.
Doesn't Woodburn sound like a porno injury?
It does. Apparently, 35-year-old Casey Reagan was run over in serious condition, unconscious. She has tire marks on her arm and on the back of her shirt. She and her brother, Michael, got into an argument.
Oh.
Then he allegedly hit her with his car, then proceeded to run her over again. And she wrote down the license number and quickly found him.
Then police searching for a missing California priest and his friend said they don't believe the pair went hiking as originally thought. Father Schwartz and Cheryl Gibbs were last seen together at a motel in Portland during the Rose Festival. So apparently they're missing and nobody's seen them since.
And he's a Catholic priest?
He's a Catholic priest who likes women.
Well, first of all, this is weird on several levels.
I know it is.
A Catholic priest who likes women, mm-hmm. and his name is Schwartz.
Yeah.
Huh.
Uh-huh. And that's all we know, really.
All right. Who won? Come on!
No. Dude, you had a story involving the word wood and the word Schwartz back-to-back. Man.
Bad priest.
I'm amazing I kept my mouth shut at all.
All right.
And it's a woman.
That's retarded.
All right. Okay.
Track marks on a wood burn. I mean, come on.
Don't let it out.
All right.
We left that one wide open for you guys. Remember the astronaut who wore diapers?
Yes.
Well,
maybe ever.
Apparently, she says she didn't wear them. It's true that she had diapers in her car, but they were left over from astronaut Nowak and her family when they were evacuated from Houston during the hurricane of 2005. The stories and the jokes about the diaper-wearing astronaut, well, they're just an urban legend. Back in February, Nowak was arrested at the airport in Orlando for allegedly driving from Houston to confront Lisa Shipman. She was involved in a romantic love triangle with astronaut Phil Olefin. Olefin told detectives that they were both married and he had a relationship with Nowak that lasted 2 years before he started seeing Miss Shipman. Not long after the confrontation in February, NASA fired both of those astronauts, allowing them to return to their assignments elsewhere.
There's some joke about since they've been fired, they're astronauts, or the not. I think it'd be funny if it was written out. No. If it was maybe, because if I could diagram that like a sentence, it'd be funny. Here's the thing about the diaper story. A, it does sort of make sense that she wasn't really wearing them, because I think we noted that really, like, how long does it take to hit a... I mean, you got to stop to get gas anyway. I mean, you got to stop to put gas in your car. But it does seem like an oddly specific detail to get wrong, though. So, and it's also more amusing to think that she was actually wearing the diaper. So we're not going to acknowledge this retraction. We're going to continue to issue the wrong version of this story forevermore.
And you have less than 4 hours to go before you can buy an iPhone.
Hurrah. Fantastic. Maybe they can just sell me an iPhone that's loaded with Michael Bay films. I can just accomplish all my personal disappointments at once. All right.
It would look fantastic.
Yeah, thanks.
That's it for me. Have a great weekend.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley, greatest newsman in the history of the world. All right. 4, 5, 6, and 7, you'll hear him top of the hour all the way through. Tom Lakis, thank you so much. All right. Aaron Durant, Scott Daly here from FilmPeopleRadio.com. All right, so... all right, so... Let's just check this one at a time. Have you guys seen either Harry Potter or Transformers?
No to the first, yes to the second.
All right. Yes, Transformers.
All right, Transformers. Now, was it, Scott, were you the one that texted me last night with the whole, like, get ready to pay off your bet to Court and Fat Boy?
Yes, I am.
All right, now,
you're going to lose.
Is it a good film, or is it just that it's better than you expected from Michael Bay?
Honestly, it's both.
It's exactly what I was going to say. It's both.
It is better. It is the best thing Michael Bay's ever done, which, granted, isn't saying a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, damn it, it is a good film. It's a good summer popcorn film. How's that?
I hate that phrase. I hate that phrase because it implies, like, that Americans just will accept. And by America, I mean us. The film, like you, like
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
It implies that it's, like, when people go... Well, you know, I knew it wasn't really going to be very good, but I went to watch it anyway. It's just, I hate that. Not like I'm a snob either. This idea that, like, we will just excuse people who give us bad films by saying it's a summer popcorn film. But Die Hard is a summer popcorn film. It's flawless, though.
Okay, but Transformers is not a bad film. When I think of summer popcorn film, I think of something like Jaws, where you just go...
Well, then you would
and
even
have,
put Transformers
I'm not
in Jaws.
I'm not comparing the
same,
two. Oh. I'm talking about the popcorn film summer blockbuster genre. Uh-huh. That's what I'm talking about. Okay?
Get city hands, Mr. Daly, been cutting money all your life.
You just go in and you sit down and you have a blast. 5 minutes into the film, you get the Transformers start blowing crap up, and it's a blast.
Is the CGI convincing in the slightest?
Yes, very much so.
Really?
Very much so.
Okay.
They do a fantastic job.
You see how invested I am in hating it and being bad?
I totally understand. Believe me, when I first heard Michael Bay was going to do this film, I was like, oh, God, it's ruined, it's destroyed. But Spielberg's along for the ride, too. But, you know, if anybody can have giant robots fighting each other and blowing stuff up, it's Michael Bay. And damn if he didn't pull it off.
All right.
And the reason I texted you last night saying you're going to lose this bet, the audience reaction to that film many, many, many times was overwhelming. People were cheering. Before it was over, people stood up and were clapping.
Yeah! The average, what did the audience look like? Average guy in the audience?
You know, it pretty much it ran the gamut. Yeah, I mean, but it went down from like 8-year-olds up to like pushing 50 years old.
And everybody had a blast. You could be a
drunk. You all are in this together, aren't you?
Here's the thing. People that didn't even want to have fun were having fun. You really can't help it. About every 10 minutes, you're like, sweet.
Even the stuffy old critics who sit in front of us, you know, they're like, yeah.
I mean, here's the thing, Rick. The movie perfectly sets it up because it opens with Peter Cullen doing a voiceover in space.
And you hear
his voice and you're screwed, man. You were stuck in.
Yeah.
You were along for the ride.
The first ride of all sentient human beings.
Exactly.
Dude, he dropped that line.
Cool. One shall stand.
One shall fall.
And they used that to fight between Megatron.
They used
and
that fight.
Prime.
A split
so
second
great.
Later, Megatron's got Prime. He's got
so
Prime
great.
Pinned down.
I thought you were made of sterner stuff.
Yeah, it's all over there, man.
Rick, I felt like I was 12 years old 5 minutes into that movie. For 2.5 hours, I was just 12 again, and I was having such a fun time. It was fun. I called my wife after this show was over, and 5 minutes into the phone call, she goes, "Stop talking a second. I need to talk. Stop talking."
They're talking about grown-up things
now. It's like, it was so
no, scary. All the vocal work is great. Hugo Weaving does not sound like Agent Smith, which is what I expected.
Because he always sounds like Hugo Weaving.
He sounds like Megatron. It was weird.
Really? Studied,
yeah,
he did. The part.
Yeah, he totally, he studied that character when he's delivering. I mean, he even goes, "You're an idiot, Starscream." It's all there, man.
All the Transformers had their personalities throughout the film. You know, when the Autobots are kind of hanging around, they kind of joke and jab at each other. It's just pure fun.
As of noon today, it is trending 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
No,
that is
a lie.
That is so funny.
That's
I'm typing in Rotten Tomatoes
that
right now.
You are making
look it up
that.
Right
at
now.
At noon today, it was trending 100%.
I
had
right
Rotten
now.
Typed in. I was just going there.
Yeah. Yep. The variety, I mean, it could have changed, but at noon today, Pacific time, it was trending 100%.
Oh, no. We're screwed.
There's no
I've typed in. I've done the
Dan
Quayle spelling. Now I can't even spell it. Now I'm writing Tomatox.
Even the fact that Bumblebee can't talk in the whole movie, he uses music to give his lines.
80%. It's at 80%.
So fantastic.
That's still doing better than most movies this year.
How is Shia LaBeouf?
He's good. He's good. I didn't really know the guy. I don't know the actor very well, but yeah, I mean, he's got enough charisma that you enjoy him. He's enough of a pretty boy without being annoying. And he's a good he does a fine job in it. He's a decent job in this film.
And let's talk about the Michael Bayisms of the film. All the every 10
is it
seconds,
any sort of generic hot girl.
Megan
Fox,
the glistening hot chick. You know,
glistening.
You've got the shiny
Fox.
Cars, Megan Fox.
Yeah, she's pretty.
But
yeah,
you've got the Michael Bay 360 up angle shots. You've got the slow motion every 5 seconds.
Right.
The military guys walk from their jets, slow motion, sun setting behind them.
Well,
that's a glorious, grandiose Michael Bay insanity.
Because I want to run out of time here. Does Die Hard 4 open today, too?
Yes, it
opens
today.
Now, Aaron had invited me to the screening, but then I found out it was in Tigard, and I was like, F that. I don't care that much.
Yeah, it's not worth driving to Tigard for.
That guy who called up earlier in the week, he's as good as the first one.
That guy's a friggin' hard. I'm sorry.
I refuse to see this film, so I'm stepping out. I don't
see, but that's my
existence.
Thing with Transformers. I mean, I'll see Die Hard 4. Just because I want to be supportive.
Rick.
I'm on.
Now, PG-13 Die Hard, seriously.
Let me be clear about this. I will not pay full price to see it in the theater. At some point, I never saw the third one. I will see the fourth one only because I want to survey the body. I want to examine the wreckage.
You want to be David Caruso in CSI.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rick, please see the third one.
I want to be like Billy Walsh in Entourage and be like, "Do you want to come in and see the bodysuit? They murdered her." Like, I want to see how badly they messed it up.
Please see the third one before you see the fourth one, because at least the third one has some trace of Die Hard in it. There's a relation, which you probably know about already. But
here's what I don't understand about Die Hard 4. I mean, leave aside the actual contents of the film. I don't understand about the production of Die Hard 4. Bruce Willis does seem to have some integrity with some of the films he makes. He does seem to care about the craft. You can tell by the movies he picks. Like, you know, of all things, you know, he's in friggin' Nancy Drew, of all movies. Not a big role, but he's in Nancy Drew.
But he's got some teenage daughters, so I can see him kind of doing that.
He clearly is not a guy just motivated by the dollar sign. My question, though, is with Die Hard 4, does he not have enough clout with his studio to be like, I will not do this movie if you try to make me do
it? He actually gave an interview in Vanity Fair and admitted, no, he doesn't have that clout anymore.
Are
no.
you kidding me?
Yeah, he pushed for it at a board meeting. Like, at one point, they were asking him questions about how they could make the movie a little more accessible.
Right.
He goes, I'll ask you a question. Who's your second choice to play John McClane?
Oh.
And he still didn't get the R rating.
That shows you Hollywood right there. I mean, if Bruce Willis can't put his foot down.
It's yippee-ki-yay mother gunshot. Yeah, that's what happens.
Put in it at all.
So why are you going to expose yourself to that?
Well, I'm saying, I'm not gonna go line him at the theater to watch it. Let me be clear about that.
Same line up for the iPhone.
I've already Die Hard 4.
At some point, I'll watch it just because I am, unlike the Transformers, which I just don't want to see because I my gut until today, and I'll be, you know, because I respect you guys' opinions, it just wasn't very, very good. My thing about Die Hard is, to me, Die Hard is not just a film, that is kind of a slice of American cinematic history, and I am perversely fascinated. Just like I saw every Nightmare on Elm Street, I saw every Friday the 13th, because I want to see how this franchise has decayed over time.
That it got a PG-13 rating should tell you right there.
I mean, that's perversely fascinating. It really is.
It's perversely fascinating in the same way Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is perversely fascinating.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with Nightmare on Elm Street 2. How dare you?
What? Seriously?
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's cool. It's a landmark.
It's a dream child.
It's a landmark in the game. It is. The homosexual undertones in that movie are...
Oh, yeah, I know.
It is like the gayest horror movie ever made. People should rent that now just to watch it and dig deep through the layers. Right. Yeah, it's like a homosexual lasagna of film. Is what it is. Just layer upon layer upon layer.
Fantastic. Yes.
Filled with cheese?
Yes.
Best Nightmare on Elm Street film. Go.
Three.
Yeah.
I'm Rhythm, the Dream Warriors. I'm all over that.
Written by
Frank Darabont.
Yeah, baby, that's what I'm talking about.
Who's making The Mist right now?
Really?
Yes, he's making Stephen King's The Mist, finally.
Does Stephen King just have like a shoot that goes from his house to Frank Darabont's house where he just puts his scripts in there and they end up in Frank Darabont's living room?
He sold
the rights to The Mist to Darabont for a buck.
Yeah, well, that's his deal.
Yeah.
He has that deal with first-time writers, actually, is that you can adapt any of his works for a dollar. Mm-hmm. And I guess he's happier, obviously, with Darabont's work than anybody else's. So.
And a good sign for Indiana Jones 4 is that most of the Darabont script seems to still be in place.
Yes, that is. Yeah. I am so confused about what the story's about and what it's not about and whose script they're using, because with the WGA rules, you can never tell who really wrote anything.
Yeah. Well, we won't know until the film comes out, we see the credits.
I got to say, and it's been on my website for a long time now, that picture of Harrison Ford as Indy, I know I've been a hater for a long time. I've been a preemptive hater. But that movie, I saw that picture and I was like, okay, you got me.
Right. I was right there with
you,
my
friend.
I'm on board.
Sold
me.
I still think he looks like a stroke victim.
Yeah. But he's supposed to be, but I mean, how old is Indy supposed to be and how old is Harrison Ford actually?
Probably supposed to be in his mid-50s in this one.
How old is Ford? 60?
Around.
So he's playing the same age.
Yeah. Just about,
And if anybody's going to age hard, it's Indiana Jones. How can you... This is like me with Transformers. How can you not be excited about Indy 4?
Rick, they just posted new Indiana Jones pictures right now.
Where?
I've never heard Rick Emerson make that noise before.
All right, we're taking a break. Back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. You stay right there, kids. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
You don't speak Hovatos. This time it will cost you.
Once again, Dr. Jones.
Whatever you possess,
we were just away.
We were just saying,
watch Priceless.
I was just saying,
buried in the desert and 10,000 years, men would kill for it. Men like you.
10,000 years, even you will be worth something.
Hello, Sarah. How you doing over there?
Dr. Jones, I love Indiana Jones.
It's a terrible, awful place.
We were just saying during the break.
We should have totally mic'd that break, by the way.
Totally.
I would say that the next time you see Christopher Hitchens, the author Christopher Hitchens on television, think Belloc from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Picture him eating a fly.
Hey, Rick. Sorry. Speaking of Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Hey, Rick.
Sorry.
Here's how much time do
I apologize.
Hold on. Everybody stop talking. How long do we have?
2 minutes.
Okay. Here's what we got to do. We got to real quickly talk about Sicko, and I got to get this phone call. We'll do this first. Hi.
You can't be man.
You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Yeah, I'll make this quick. The difference between nerds and geeks, and there is a lot of overlap, but the fundamental difference is nerd areas of study tend to be practically applicable, hard science type stuff. Astronomy, chemistry, computer programming. Geeks is mostly what you would call trivia, where you may be able to find a use for it, but it wouldn't be...
But it's only in this job. I've got a much simpler definition.
I've got a better definition.
Much simpler definition. Geeks and nerds are separated by this. Geeks have at least an ounce of self-awareness. That's it.
I would also... My definition is this. And see, it's interesting that we all have the shifting sand. My definition is this. Geeks are socially inept in most outside external settings, but within their own circle, their own community, they can operate like you know, normal people, like players, like whatever. Mm-hmm. Nerds are completely and socially non-functional in all settings, even with each other.
I'll agree with that completely.
Geeks can roll like a pimp in their own circle. Nerds roll like nothing nowhere.
Some geeks can roll.
They roll like 20s. That's what they roll.
It's only.
I believe it.
Excellent. Thank you, Kevin.
All right, have a good one.
All right, thank you.
No, out of the way, hotline.
No, no, seriously, you put Aaron with a dice throwing girl, and he totally can roll whatever. You put him with like
Aaron
a normal
found a dice throwing.
That's what I'm saying. But nerds, if you see nerds, they can't even talk to each other.
Yeah.
I mean, they just sit there and they're totally like, I have no emotions.
Nerd girl would never think of getting like a Triforce tramp stamp.
No.
Geek girl would do it.
Totally.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
Aaron.
All right. Oh. Sicko opens today?
Yeah, Sicko opens today.
I mean,
today.
It's a critic-proof movie.
It's a Michael Moore film about the HMOs and the lack of. And Fatboy, you know, we saw last week.
Yes.
And it's fantastic.
It's his best since Roger and Me.
Yeah, hands down. And also opens today Ratatouille, which I saw last week, which is fantastic. Brad Bird, Pixar, what else do you want?
All right.
It's fantastic.
See that Michael Moore porno, Rogering Me? Hello!
Followed up with the awful girth. And then, of course, the big one.
Fahrenheit down below.
Stop. We're done.
Downside?
All right. FilmFeverRadio.com, GeekInTheCity.com, Court and Fatboy, Rock 101 KUFO 7 to Midnight Kiss.
Roll out.
We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Rachel McGrath and Lisa Goddard today, as well as MC Chris. Rick Emerson, show producer today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio in the newsroom. Tim Riley, the PA, Scotty J, the gatekeepers, Dave Zinn. Like us next. We'll see you Monday. Be safe. Don't let the bastards grind you down. Do try to help the retarded. Watch out for snakes. Bye.
The can't be man, the can't be man.